order. And please note, assistive listening devices for the use in the council chamber are available on request, and you can get it up from the clerks to my immediate right. I will now call on Councillor Misapelli to start the meeting with a prayer and lead us in the national anthem. If everyone can please stand.
May this council commit to exercising perception and patience so that justice, truth, and honesty may be evident in our planning and our governing. Make us aware of the needs of each of the parts of this town of Caledon. Save us from parochialism that divides, and so create in us a desire for progress and responsible action.
Okay, is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest from members of council? None? I'll now ask for the confirmation of minutes. Moved by Councillor Misapelli, second by Councillor Innes, that the minutes dated January 30th, 2018 be approved. No questions? All in favor? Carried. We'll move on to, is there any urgent business matters? Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I have a piece of urgent business, and I understand that the procedural bylaw would have to be waived in order to hear it.
Okay. Could you tell us what the urgent business is, Councillor Shaughnessy? I'm going to give you, I think it's only fair that we know what we're talking on.
No, okay.
No, I know how the procedure says. We have to do it before we know.
Okay. Sorry, I'm still really sick. I'm staying to my end of the table here. Yes, it's youth in Caledon. Some have come to me and are concerned that they had done agreements with the town of Caledon in November about getting the $14 amount. And then I guess the province changed something in January, and they got a letter saying that they wouldn't be getting that $14 anymore. And they asked me to bring it forward. And they're upset because already they're being held back for, as far as they're concerned, on their pay. And instead of allowing it to go on too long, I will let you know that this came to me on the Friday after the committee agendas were done, and I wasn't able to put it in on the Monday because the clerk doesn't allow that anymore. So unfortunately, it's now been weeks sitting in my hands, and they would just like me to bring it forward, and I think they're the youth of Caledon, and they deserve to be heard.
And I do agree to that, Councillor Shaughnessy. Can I ask some questions of staff on this? Because we don't have anybody here from HR tonight. Mr. Galloway, can you take the question on this? Question is on this, can we bring the, I think it'd be better if it comes back as committee so we know what we're talking about. And if we have to revert it back, we can revert it back to January 1 if that's the case, correct?
Yes, Your Worship. this is the first we're hearing about it. Our general manager of community services, did you hear about this issue prior to this evening?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, to our CAO. So youth under the age of 18, the law says it's $13-$15 an hour. When the original and after, sorry, and anybody over 18, it's $14 an hour. So Bill 148 was to address people who have minimum income and that are supporting families. That's the reason why the minimum increase was going to $14. Children on the age of 18 or youth on the age of 18 is $13.15. There was some confusion late last year whether it should have been $14 if they were working a certain amount of hours. We got clarification of that in the beginning of January. January's pay, they got paid the $14. We knew that on the second pay in January that it was incorrect. We've corrected that on the second pay in January and sent letters to anybody under the age of 18 should be $13.15. That's what the Bill 148 states, and that's what we're paying them based on.
Okay. No, that's good clarification for council. So my suggestion at this point would be there's not a lot of information to go on. I know there was a notice of motion, but my suggestion, my firm suggestion, because this is an employee matter, is that you let us investigate it. Councillor Shaughnessy, I'm sure, will contact my office tomorrow and give me further information and indicate and provide any information that she may have from the employees that may have contacted her. And we can certainly bring an update to the next committee meeting, and I think that would be appropriate with an employee engagement matter.
Councillor Shaughnessy, are you okay with that?
Well, I just want to say that I did touch base with the clerk at the last meeting we had because I wanted to bring it forth at committee, but there's no place in our committee structure for urgent matters. So our clerk was aware of it. She did speak to Peggy Tollett about it. We have been back and forth, but what the message is why I'm bringing it forward is that I'm looking for the town of Cullen to honor what these young people signed back in November. Normally, I would not be treading on employee relationships or pay, but they've asked me to, and that is my job as a counselor to bring it forward. So it's about honoring agreement, and it's about honoring an agreement that is of existing students, not anybody new that would be hired, but of the existing students who actually, on their active record form, were told that they were getting the $14 an hour, and it's dated November 16th, 2017. So that's what I'm here about. If you actually think we need to talk more about this, then I will allow it to come forward as a notice of motion. It's just going down the line further and further because of our council structure.
I understand, Councillor Shaughnessy, but I think if we want to give this thing justice, I think tonight there's just not enough information for council. So if we put it as a notice of motion, then we can get an addendum and then we can have a good discussion to figure out where we're going, if you're okay with that.
I will do that because okay. I understand we have a packed room here tonight, and we'll move it forward at the next meeting. Thank you very much.
Okay. And, Your Worship, just for clarification, can Councillor Shaughnessy provide me with the documentation she's been provided by the employee or employees, please?
Okay, so I'm being marginally touchy here because these kids were worried. They don't want to lose their jobs by protesting. So I hate to give up any of the information. I would ask that you go back and look at your records from October, November, December at what was signed and promised to these youth in Caledon.
Point of order.
Yes.
This is highly inappropriate. You're talking about confidential matters between employers and employees.
It's not confidential.
This is not the time or the place. You're talking about contracts with minors.
It's
this
not
is
contract.
Not specific. I would ask that we continue on with the agenda and follow the procedural bylaw, please.
Yes, then you're quite correct, but I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. That's why I waived it, because I just want to make sure where we're going. But thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. We'll carry on.
That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Your Worship, just for clarification, if Councillor Shaughnessy could provide that, it would be appreciated. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to move on. I'm going to ask, because we have a number of presentations, and normally it's at the back of the agenda. And I think for fairness for everybody that's here tonight, if we can move everything forward. So I need a mover and a seconder. Okay, moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Beffert, that section 8.1 of the procedural bylaw be waived to alter the order of the agenda to move presentations prior to the committee recommendations. Okay, all in favor? It's carried. Okay. Do we move this one as well? Okay, and I also need, I'm going to bring it forward at this point too, that section, another one, I need a mover and a seconder, so I'll explain what it is. Section 8.8.2, 8.8.3, and 8.84 procedural bylaw be waived to permit the presentation to be heard of the North Peel Community Church regarding Black History Month. And as by Councillor Downey and Councillor Ennis. Okay. All in favor of that as well? Okay. All right, now, so we've got that. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to follow the order of the agenda first. So I'm going to bring on delegations. I will now call upon Ian Sinclair, resident of the town of Kelland, to approach the podium to provide a delegation concerning the official plan, zoning bylaw amendment applications of Lafarge and proposed Lime Beer Pit, 18251 McLaren Road. And please note the procedural bylaw. You have 10 minutes, as you know, Mr. Sinclair. And I will ask Council's diligence if we can bring the report forward after the delegation, okay? And we'll just deal with it when we go.
Thank you. As a disclaimer, I'm not appearing in any role associated with the Green Lake Association. I don't own land there. No relative has ever owned land there. And I've not been asked to speak on their behalf. I'd like to characterize the Green Lake Association lands and the gravel extraction. The lots at Green Lake were created in the early 50s. And at that time, there was a small sand and gravel pit down near the escarpment on the west side of Highway 10. There was another small hole where Caledon sand and gravel is now. And it was supplying Peel Block at the time. And a third hole was where the Caledon Works Yard is at Quarry Road. It was a brick sand pit. So since that time, the Green Lake lots and cottages have been completely surrounded by one of the largest continuous strip mines for gravel in North America. Totally surrounded. Then, and I need the overhead here. This mastodon of a gravel company, cement company, showed up and bought the Lime Beer Farm next to the Green Lake cottages and partially owned Green Lake. An absolutely massive company. And at no time has this council or any previous council attempted to give any support to the Green Lake residents in dealing with a strip mine, really aggressive filing. Within 100 feet of their houses, they were going to mine. And seeing that, the Green Lake cottagers ended up trying to negotiate with Lafarge and came to some agreement. They think it was a big deal to get the excavation pushed back another 100 feet away from the cottages, directly upwind. And there are other agreements, and I understand there's a non-disclosure agreement with each cottager and Lafarge. I have no idea what's in it. So I don't think there's any solace that council can take, or staff, that Green Lake is arm-in-arm with Lafarge, right? Totally one-sided. I'd like to speak to the report. Hope you can read it. So the staff report says straight out that there is no requirement in the Caledon official plan for a standalone social impact study. But if you read the policies of the Caledon official plan, you'll find very clear requirements for social impacts to be considered. And sure enough, it uses the word assessed, not a study. And you could quibble around and say, well, what form of an assessment will take? Is it going to be a brief, a folio, a report? But it's very clear that they're to be considered. And by making a statement there's no requirement for a social impact study, the staff report then goes on essentially to a bare-bones consideration of basic considerations of noise and dust. Goes on to say an assessment of social impact based on predictable, measurable, significant, objective effects on people caused by factors such as noise, dust, traffic levels, and vibration, but not limited to those. So that's a problem. It goes on to say, and the studies, using the word studies now, also references regulations. So I think it's really hair-splitting to say there's no requirement for a social impact study. Then omitted totally from staff report 2018-11 is Caledon Official Plan Policy 511-242K. The applicant has prepared a land use planning analysis and has demonstrated that the proposal will not result in any unacceptable land use conflicts. And further on, there's another policy dealing with land use compatibility. That would be a strip mine immediately upwind and abutting people's houses. For the purposes of this plan, sensitive land use shall mean buildings, amenity areas, or outdoor spaces where routine or normal activities occurring at reasonably expected times would experience one or more adverse effects from aggregate operations or major facilities. Adverse effects shall be as defined by the PPS. So where is this land use conflicts and land use planning analysis? Why was it not required of Lafarge? Why was it totally overlooked in the report? How come we're cherry-picking policies out of OPA 161, our aggregate policies? So, and you constantly get the line, oh, well, we've done a sound report, we've done a dust report and a traffic report and tossed them in a pile and there you go. You sort it out. Only limited to those. So these technical reports go way beyond the requirements when you look at land use planning analysis of land use conflicts. The work hasn't been done. So have to look at the PPS. So the PPS now acts as a regulation. And in the Planning Act, it clearly says the PPS will be approved by the Lieutenant Governor and Council. That'd be Cabinet. And that's how they approved regulations. And then you go into the PPS itself, and in implementation, it says this PPS applies to all decisions in respect to the exercise of any authority that affects a planning matter It goes on to say, in accordance with Section 3 of the Planning Act, a decision of the council of a municipality, and it goes on to name a whole lot of other agencies and ministries, shall be consistent with this PPS. And it goes further, this provincial policy statement shall be read in its entirety, and all relevant policies are to be applied in each situation. It doesn't say cherry pick. And in the PPS, there's this policy 126, land use compatibility. And it reads, major facilities and sensitive land uses should be planned to ensure they are appropriately designed, buffered, and or separated from each other to prevent or mitigate adverse effects from odor, noise, and other contaminants, minimize risk to public health and safety, and to ensure the long-term viability of major facilities. It's a two-sided coin. You won't want to smack up sensitive land uses against the major facility and cause friction, or vice versa. And in the PPS, when you see a term major facilities in italics, that means you have to go to the back and look at the definitions. And the definition for major facilities means facilities which may require separation from sensitive land uses, and then gives a huge number of examples, and ends up with resource extraction activities. Could be a gravel strip mine, could be a gold mine, a zinc mine, an iron mine. So we've got major facilities, land use compatibilities. Sensitive land uses, looks like the Caledon official plan here, means buildings, amenity areas, or outdoor spaces where routine or normal activities occurring at reasonably expected times would experience one or more adverse effects, and enlists residences as a sensitive land use. Then it goes on to adverse effects. And we have impairment of the quality of the natural environment for any use that can be made of it. B, injury or damage to property or plant or animal life. Harm or material discomfort to any person. D, an adverse effect on the health of any person. Impairment of the safety of any person. Rendering any property or plant or animal life unfit for human use. Loss of enjoyment of normal use of property. This policy and the definitions has never been considered in relation to the Lafarge application to open a strip mine immediately abutting the cottages as a sensitive land use and upwind. Why? So, staff report 2018-11 and the recommendations is not consistent with the PPS. The report is not consistent with the Caledon official plan. And I'll tell you, I expressed some dismay at residents in Caledon being completely abandoned to terrible effects on them for 10 to 12 years in the summer months. These people are of modest means. They don't have big money to raise and fight a massive company like Lafarge. And you know, we spent 9 years between the region and the town of Caledon and $2 million to put OPA 161, the aggregate policies, through to approval. And they're being cherry-picked and not applied. This is discouraging. I would urge council not to approve this report tonight. Any questions?
Thank you. Councillor Gross?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Ian, thank you for your delegation. Certainly, if anyone knows the aggregate policies, certainly you do. You've done a lot of work on these policies and have had a lot of input on there. So my question through you, Mayor Thompson, to staff, Mr. Sinclair made a number of points, and most importantly is that the staff report is not consistent with Caledon's OP and the PPS. So I'm looking for clarification on the contradictions here. And Ian pointed out a number of contradictions. And so I don't understand how the report came before us. I'm sorry, I'm not done.
Okay.
With all of these inconsistencies not addressed.
You done?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Tullock.
Through Mayor Thompson, I'll have Brandon Ward speak to his report. So he's here to answer questions.
Mr. Ward. Pardon me?
Sorry, point of order procedurally. Is it not supposed to be when the report comes forward? This is supposed to be questions of the delegate only.
It is questions of the delegate. The delegate
references. So when the questions are for the staff, then that's when the staff report comes forward. At this point, that question is not for the delegate.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring the report forward. And,
thank you.
You have no further questions of Mr. Sinclair at this point?
No.
Okay. Mr. Sinclair, thank you, and I'll bring the report. Okay.
Sorry, I would like an answer to my
well,
question.
Well, I am when I they say they will for the report procedurally. You're asking questions on the report on what Mr. Sinclair said, that we can definitely do that. It's you're asking questions of, not of Mr. Sinclair, but of staff, so we can do that when we bring the report forward.
Would you like me to get back on the board
yes.
then?
Yes, well, okay. We'll do that.
Thank you.
Because I got Councillor Shaughnessy.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you. A couple questions. One, he spoke about noise, and I would like him to expand on that first for me. I'm sorry, bear with me. I was not here at committee, so I'm now doing my due diligence. So, Mr. Sinclair, but you mentioned about social impact and noise. And the fact that it basically says these are just some of the things that should be considered. But I know noise was one of the ones you listed.
Yes, the proposed hours of operation are 7 in the morning to 7 at night, 5 days a week, and 7 in the morning to noon on Saturday. You have to know that the mining of aggregate doesn't occur in the winter. They use wash plants. So they have to screen it and crush it and wash it. So that means in the times that the residents on Green Lake would enjoy outdoors, there's going to be a strip mine operating within 70 meters of their houses. And the equipment proposed, of course, is massive articulated loaders, rock trucks, bulldozers, scrapers, whatever they need to mine that gravel and ship it out to the biggest plant they've got. So I find it amazing. I was in this room at an environmental hearing office for the Niagara Escarpment hearing 10 days or so ago, and there was an expert witness on sound, and they said the sound that I'm speaking at now would be around 42 decibels. Well, the rock trucks and mining equipment will be anywhere from 85 to 120 decibels. And the source for that information is in the draft planning justification report that was put forward by Lafarge at the public information meeting. So along with the dust, there's going to be one great racket all summer, every day. And I think that's unfair. I don't think there's an adequate buffer here.
Okay. Councillor Shaughnessy?
I'm still going back to the social, because I think there's a lot more having to do with social impact than what's in the OP, and with it saying such as leaves me to believe that there are more avenues that we should be looking at. What about property valuations? Is that part of a, Mr. Sinclair, is that something that you would consider part of a social impact?
Mr. Sinclair?
Well, if I could find the piece of paper here. It shows the list. Turn this off. That's the definition in the PPS for adverse effects. So loss of enjoyment of normal use of property would certainly indicate market value of the lands. And you know, there's quite a number of these residents. They're on second generation ownership of the lots. They may have to sell during the term that the 10 to 12 years this pit will be on operation. They're going to take a bad hit on their prices because of the operation of a pit immediately adjacent to their lands and upwind. I don't know when you're going to show the land to them, maybe Saturday afternoon or Sunday, but you've got to watch yourself when you sell land these days. You better have full disclosure. So there's a list there that covers a great deal of social impact. It doesn't use the term, it says adverse effects. That's it.
Thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy, any more questions? Okay. Councillor Ennis.
Thank you. I believe in the presentation that we did hear from the Green Lakes Residents Association that they had been working in a mediation of sorts with Lafarge for the past 7 years. Had you participated in any of those meetings between the Residents Association and Lafarge?
None.
Were you privy to any of those discussions from either of those parties?
None.
And so for clarification, you are not here on behalf of the Residents Association?
That's what I said at the beginning.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Befford, are you wanting to speak to Mr. Sinclair or the report? Not yet. Okay. Go for it. No, Annette's waiting for the report.
Thank you, Ian. You're always an advocate for the best we can get in gravel. But we did have a member of the Green Lake Association present to us. And I'm getting a little bit of a conflict of information. You started by saying there was no support whatsoever from the town of Caledon. I personally am having difficulty with that because I sat in on several meetings and we had staff provide opportunities, particularly with the with regard to being a Kettle Lake. We had engineers from CBC. And I guess the issue that there are some issues that you have that I think are best directed to the aggregate committee that I believe we have put together at this council. But with regard to this particular pit, every single member of the Green Lake Association not just gave a verbal commitment to what they have agreed to with Lafarge, but actually signed. And if it's not 100%, it's 99% of the houses that would be directly affected by whatever's going to go on. And the gentleman who presented to us did talk about the hours of operation, and I think they also had other issues that they spoke about as well, which are not related to the application, and that was their perfect right to work with Lafarge mm-hmm. and get whatever they could from Lafarge, and also to work with the town and make sure that what they were doing was appropriate. Our understanding is that there will be a loader and probably two trucks, and that all of the material will be taken to an on-site pit crusher, which will not be anywhere near where Green Lake is. It will be over by Highway 10. So I'm getting a little bit of a conflicting message. I understand on a 30,000-foot level what you're saying about the PPS and about the official plan of the town of Caledon, and I think those things need to be discussed, just as you discussed them many years ago and led to the Chip Mara program and led to 161, and thank you for that. But on this particular case, all of the residents, the gentleman stood up and thanked several of us that took part in the program. Did they tell you that they felt no support from the town of Caledon?
That is my interpretation of what I understood their feelings were, that they had to negotiate with Lafarge on their own and make the best of a very bad situation.
Well, thank you for being candid on that. I disagree with you, but thanks for your presentation.
Correction, I'm not aware of any aggregate advisory committee in the town of Caledon. None.
Okay, Councillor Groves. Of the report, okay. I'll bring the report forward.
Am I done?
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Ian. Moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor McClure, that February 6, 2018 Planning and Development Committee report recommendation regarding staff report 2018-11 official plan and zoning amendment applications, Lafarge Canada proposed Lime Beer Pit, 18251 McLaren Road, Ward 1 be adopted. Okay. First of all, Councillor Gross, I'm going to put you're the one that asked the question, so how about I get Mr. Ward to answer those first, and then I'll let you continue on with the dialogue, okay? Mr. Ward, you're on.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Thompson, and through you to Councillor Groves. I believe the question was in relation to the delegate submissions that the contents in the staff report are perhaps inaccurate. There were some references made to specific policies, particularly with respect to requirements for a social impact study, as well as an assessment of the land use compatibility policies in the official plan. Both of those sections were assessed in detail in the staff report, particularly in the public comment and response table. As I'm sure you will recall, both of those matters were raised at the public information meeting, particularly the requirement for social impact study. Staff stand behind the interpretation that the official plan does not explicitly require a standalone study. The policy language is framed in such a way that the assessment of social impacts is to be contained through various reports. That's been provided to you. Similarly, with respect to the assessment of the land use compatibility policies, this has been interpreted in a number of ways throughout the review of this application, particularly by various submissions coming forward from members of the public. These policies actually apply more specifically to consideration of a proposed sensitive use in proximity to either an existing licensed operation or the chip or the limits of the Caledon High Potential Mineral Aggregate Resource Area designations. And the reason for those policies is to ensure that we're not introducing new land uses that might be incompatible with not only the existing operations, but the potential extraction of resource within those Chitmara identified resource areas. So it's not a simple question. And again, the policy is worded very specifically to that effect. It's not a reversal. There's a number of policies contained throughout the mineral resource policies in the official plan that speak to looking at land use compatibility, et cetera. And I guess in summary, with respect to the submission that the that puts the planning report in question, my response is the I guess interpretations and opinions contained in this report have been presented from a professional planning standpoint to you, and staff remain of the opinion that those opinions are accurate and defendable. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Gross.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Brandon. Well, I guess the concern that I have and is and I heard what Brandon said, but Mr. Sinclair has pointed out some inconsistencies with the PPS and our official plan. Now, Mr. Sinclair also pointed out that these residents really, they don't have the resources to fight this at the board, so I'm sure it's not going to the board. And but I am concerned that that we are not consistent with the PPS. And one of the points Mr. Sinclair made was a decision of a municipality shall be consistent with the PPS. So I have some concerns there when I'm reading this or listening to what Mr. Sinclair has to say. We've had other residents come before us on other applications with respect to these gravel pits and aggregate operations, stating the same concerns and a number of concerns. And we have one, the Tottenham pit. It's still out there, and residents are still concerned. But the aggregate industry is Goliath, and these folks are David. And they certainly don't have the resources to fight or defend their quality of life, their loss of enjoyment of their properties, and we've heard that several times over the years with these gravel pit applications, these aggregate applications. And so I guess I'm just concerned because there are some inconsistencies here, and I'd like to know how we are addressing that with the PPS, because the PPS at the end of the day governs, and the PPS really, in my opinion, overrides our official plan, and our official plan should be consistent with the PPS, and if we're not being consistent, then something is wrong. So I don't know what we do, but certainly I think that they should go back, because I don't know that we should be making these decisions without having everything in front of us. The residents came forward. I did hear them, that they were they didn't have many concerns, but are they really versed in the aggregate policies, the town's official plan, the PPS? I don't think so. Most residents are not. They don't know, because it's a complicated document. I don't even know everything that's in the PPS, but it is very complex. So I do have some concerns, and I don't know that we should be moving forward with this report until some of these concerns are addressed that the delegate raised. Thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't know where to start. I've gone through this report many times, Brandon, and nowhere do I see, other than in the charts at the back, talking about compatibility. To me, extremely important to the people in Ward 1. I did speak to, and have over the last year or so, spoke to the residents on Green Lake. And there's a big difference, and Councillor Grove sort of hit the nail on the head. When I spoke to them, they didn't know what was had to do with aggregate and what had to do with just they needed something and they wanted a compromise. We left them hanging for 9 years. We let them fend for themselves. When I asked them, well, what did you get? They said they got to choose the trees that they're going to put on the property. Wow, thank you. They got the fence put back. Thank you. The berm got slightly pushed back. But if you look at our policies, and I'll recite one of those. 5.11.2.6.1, which is the area influence should be 300 meters setback from sand and gravel and 500 meters from a quarry. Who thought that 70 meters was okay? These people were there long before aggregate was there. It was farmland. It was beautiful farmland. I grew up on that land. I know what it looked like with Connie Smythe's horses. Aggregate came to them. They didn't move the lake to the aggregate. So why is it okay for the aggregate industry to say, I don't want any development within 300 meters of my property, because the word is, I don't want you to preclude or hinder my operation. Yet when it comes to these wonderful seniors living on a lake in a cottage area, we're going to put them 70 meters. I don't get that. That doesn't even make sense to me. As far as an aggregate advisory committee, this is exactly one of those applications that would have been perfect for it, but the town of Caledon doesn't have it. I fought for it, and I lost here at council. There is no aggregate advisory committee. This would have been the perfect opportunity to show the people at Tottenham Pit, Olympia Pit, and the people at Green Lake that we actually really care. I think this sends a strong message to my residents in my ward, because for the last 3 years, I've worked hard trying to understand aggregate and try to say, let's find balance. Aggregate is here, but there is balance. This is not balance. This is totally slanted toward the aggregate producer. Mr. Sinclair put that number up. Well, Lafarge is the largest aggregate producer in the world. Could they not have done a better job at compromising? Scrap the trees, scrap the fence, put it back the way they want it when it suits them. And it's not against, I'm not talking against Lafarge, but they will argue that you cannot build a house or you cannot put anything within 300 meters of one of their facilities because you would preclude them. So why doesn't it go two ways? Hours of operation, I didn't get that. Didn't make sense. Length and duration, 5.2 million tons. Lafarge stockpiles well over 1.5 million tons over a winter because James Dick across the road stockpiles 1 million. So why are we saying 10 to 12 years? Because they're afraid of the word sunset clause. It's been done under the Niagara Escarpment, and this would have been the perfect opportunity because it is so unique to actually put a sunset clause in. It would have been no skin off their nose. They could have done it. And I don't care if the M&R doesn't like it. M&R could take us to the OMB. But we have to start standing behind our residents. Development chairs. Somebody's got to explain this to me. I have never heard of an aggregate company being charged development charges, but when we talk about financial implications here, there's a levy that we get charged. Town of Caledon made $250,000 on aggregate in the town of Caledon. Region Appeal made $60,000. Yet somehow somebody's telling me they get development charges from them. I don't understand where this financial implication came from. Doesn't make sense to me. Development charges are subject to indexing February 1st and August 1st. They don't pay development charges. So where did that come from? So
Mr. Ward, you want to explain that?
They pay a levy.
On the development charge?
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Thompson. And through you to Councillor Shaughnessy, with respect to the financial implications content in the report, you'll note or you may recall that that content specifically gave reference to development charges being payable upon issuance of building permit. Let's face it, with an aggregate application such as this, there will be no it's unlikely that a building permit would be issued for any sort of processing facilities, so an aggregate operation would not be required to pay development charges, hence because of there no building permit being issued.
Right, exactly. So it's a red herring. For me, it was a red herring in the report, and I don't know who put it in there because actually nobody signs these things that come to us anymore. It says submitted by, but I don't know who actually says it's their report and is going to stand behind it if it goes to the OMB. I'm just not sure about that, guys. Anyways.
Ms. Tollett, want to explain what that the town of Caledon, if it goes to the OMB, that it's our report and you're the...
So through you, Mayor Thompson, so it's our report. So if it goes to OMB, then we would have to defend it and the report writer would defend the report and their manager as well.
Thank you. Mr. Shaughnessy.
So this is a really important one. This is really, really important. Really important to Ward 1, because if we can go 70 meters off the back of a house on Green Lake, what does that say to any of my other developments anywhere else in Ward 1? That they're going to be able to come up and go 70 meters off the backside of one of my residential areas? That's not right. It's 300 meters. It's got to work both ways. And yes, I want to say Lafarge could have done better on this one. They could have done better. You could not. It could have been not 9 years. It could have been 1 year. It could have been push back the berm to something appropriate. It could have been the sunset clause, whether you like it or not. It has happened. And you know what? They deserved evaluations of their property. Because quite frankly, I already spoke to one of them. And they were going to sell it. They had three people come. Two people said, an aggregate operation behind? No, I'm out of here. then the third one collapsed. So it does affect. We know that. And what I took exception in this report was I have to give credit to Mr. Shapton, who does his work on evaluations. And in this report, it made it sound like there was no... there was nothing that we could grasp on here at the town of Caledon. Well, there's OMB decisions acknowledging the adverse effect. There's an organization, actually the Alberta. I mean, I sent it, everything to the staff here after the fact because I was away sick. But there's good information out there. Canadian information out there, not the American stuff. So, yes, it was a Goliath and it was a David because these people didn't understand and we let them down. And as much as I tried to help, I'm still not the expert. But 70 meters, it's too darn close. I even found out I had Heritage Caledon send me stuff today on the big elk that was like over 150 years old that was found in the bog in the lake. It was one of the giant ones that's extinct. They told me about, Heritage Caledon told me about the camp. They used to run a camp there in the 20s, kids camp. So I agree with Mr. St. Clair. It's a sensitive land use, and we don't belong having aggregate 70 meters out somebody's back door. So I am putting a referral on the floor, please. For councils, because I think we need to go back and look. And Mr. Ward, if you can show me other situations where we have put aggregate 70 meters off of somebody's backyard, please bring it forward to me. I want to see it. But all I know in our policy is it says 300 meters. So I think we need to have that kind of information back. Before, and LaForge isn't running over and saying, well, we need the aggregate right away, because they said it's 12 years. So a little more time won't hurt. So, Mr. Mayor, do you want me to just read it? Or it is printed up nicely. So you could put it on the screen.
Sure.
That would save me reading it because my throat is killing me.
Do you have a seconder for that motion? Councillor Groves. Okay, I will take questions now to the motion here. Councillor DeBoer, do you want to speak to this or to the actual motion itself?
I guess we're speaking to this now,
aren't we? Yes.
I guess it's important for staff because they did work on the report, and I'd like to get their opinion on the comment because it is a fairly, and I think you can talk to your requirements as professional planners as to where your work and how you address these issues, but I think it's fairly important to say that this report and this work is not consistent with the PPS in 2014. I think that's a fairly strong statement, I think, that you would say directed toward the profession. So I was wondering if you want to comment on your report and the comment with regards to the PPS and whether it conforms to it or not.
Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson, and through you to Councillor DeBoer. The recommendations provided in the planning report before you are expert professional planning recommendations that have been submitted to you. Again, staff stand behind those recommendations, and I would suggest my question with respect to the language in the motion before you. It simply states further work required to be consistent with the provincial policy statement. The recommendations in the staff report have analyzed the provincial policy statement in great detail, and staff have come to the conclusion that the application's the submission material, the corresponding technical review that's taken place amongst external agencies, external peer review consultants that have been hired where necessary to review some of the technical studies on behalf of the town. All of that collective review exercise, as well as the consideration of comments received from the public through the consultation process, have enabled staff to arrive at the conclusion that the applications are consistent with the provincial policy statement, as well as the Caledon official plan mineral resource policies. And staff would also like to note that the language in the motion with respect to pre-existing Green Lake residential lots be considered as a sensitive land use. Those lots are already considered as a sensitive land use by virtue of they are sensitive receptors with respect to noise impacts, with respect to air quality impacts, visual impacts, water impacts, and so on. Each of those impacts or potential impacts have been assessed in great detail through the submission of the technical reports in those disciplines, and they've also been correspondingly reviewed by experts in those fields, which have determined that there will be no such adverse or negative impacts to those Green Lake lots. And I would suggest that the dialogue that has taken place amongst the Green Lake residents with staff and with the applicant and their submission at the committee meeting is a testament to that.
Thank you. Okay. And just so that we've got an understanding, can you even hazard a guess as the number of different individuals that looked at the information and the number of hours that would go into something like this? Because I think it's important for everyone to understand that this isn't something that's done just on a fairly quick basis.
Thank you again. Through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor DeBoer. The applications were submitted in April of 2014. It's 4 years ago, and even prior to that, there was quite a lengthy pre-submission consultation exercise, which the applicant engaged into with staff as well as external agencies to determine not only what are the submission documents required, what are the contents of those documents supposed to entail, essentially through the submission and review and approval of it, what we refer to as a terms of reference. In terms of speculating the number of hours put into this, again, it's been a four-year application and submission review process. There's been a public information held under the Planning Act applications, as well as another public open house held under the Concurrent Aggregate Resources Act license application process, which that application process in of itself is very involved and has a very extensive public consultation process.
Okay, and the statement that says that the Caledon official plan, that it's not consistent, I want to kind of read it, but with regards to it being inconsistent with the official plan, section 5-1 of the mineral resources, I guess is that clause, does it relate to the sensitive use area? Because I don't have that plan in front of us.
Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson, and through you again to Councillor DeBoer. Again, the policy was referenced with respect to land use compatibility. The language in that policy is very clear, as it applies a distance of 300 meters from pit operations and 500 meters for quarries, and the distance is very clear to be measured from either the limits of the Caledon High Potential Mineral Resource Area designation or the extraction limits of existing licensed operations. So again, this policy is very specific to looking at new sensitive land uses from being introduced in those areas. And the reason being is to not only make sure that we're not introducing land uses that may be impacted, that weren't otherwise considered through the review exercise that took place through those existing operations, but it's also to, and I think it was mentioned earlier, to ensure that those new sensitive uses do not hinder or preclude the future use of that merit resource. And again, that's predicated upon policies, and this stems all the way up to provincial policies in that mineral aggregate resources are a provincial interest and are of interest to the province. And there's policies in place that make sure that resource is to be made available to accommodate growth and so forth.
Okay, so I think it's important to know that there is provincial, the province also weighs in on these setbacks. And I know that from my previous, before being on here and being part of the Federation of Agriculture, we ran into, when the town was developing the aggregate policies, we ran into and had large conversations between the province and the town on looking at the impacts of agricultural expansion in these areas as an interim use. And I know that we had to go a long ways to get everyone to come on side and look at the fact that agriculture should be and could expand in these areas up until the time when the aggregate was needed. As far as the setbacks, and that seemed to be a big discussion, we have it in agriculture, but you're talking 300 meters, I think you started on to, or you did cover that, 300 meters from a new use, but then why is there only a 70-meter setback coming the other way?
Mr. Ward?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson, and through you to Councillor DeBoer. The setbacks with respect to the proposed operation are derived based on a number of factors, namely the scale and the magnitude of the proposed operation. What does that entail with respect to possible impacts regarding noise, et cetera, and the ability to mitigate those measures? So the technical studies that have been submitted as part of the applications have demonstrated that based on the nature of the operation, keep in mind this is a feeder operation, which means there's no standalone processing facilities in this operation. It's essentially going to serve as a physical extension to the existing Caledon main pit operation adjacent to it. Based on the fact that there's going to be no processing, et cetera, it's only extraction, that the impacts are significantly less than there would be, say, if there was a standalone processing facility, water taking, et cetera, occurring at this operation. So because of that, you're down to air quality, noise, et cetera. I'd also note that there's no traffic implications for the surrounding lands, given that it is utilizing existing interpit haul road system. Measuring all that up has demonstrated that the proximity to the Green Lake residents with respect to this proposed operation is feasible and there will not be any negative impacts resulting from the operation.
Okay. And then just once again, just to conclude, in your professional opinion, does this report and the application meet the provincial policy statements and the Town of Caledon official plan?
Again, through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor DeBoer, the contents of the staff report are very clear that in planning staff's opinion, the applications are consistent with the 2014 provincial policy statement. They conform to the applicable policies of both the Greenbelt plan and the Town of Caledon official plan, as well as the Region of Peel official plan.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Befford.
Thank you. I will not support this motion for two reasons. The first reason, I think Brandon has clearly outlined the connection between the provincial policy statement, our official plan, and all of the items that have been addressed through many meetings, public meetings. But I don't want to leave here tonight with the impression that the Green Lake Association members were duped. The Green Lake Association were represented by two gentlemen, Richard and David. Richard came and spoke to us last meeting, who are skilled, intelligent, and extremely good businessmen. They, of all people, know what sensitivity is in terms of the land beside their properties. They have spoken to Lafarge over the 9 years or 7 years very clearly about many of the issues that have been mentioned here tonight. And they all signed a final agreement saying, for our land, our houses, our sensitivity, we are happy with what we have put together. And believe me, they were sharp enough to put together a lot of good things. Again, some of them are related to the application. Some of them are not, because they're neighbors and they negotiated things that were not part of the application. At the end of the road, and I'm going to go back to a comment that was made by my colleague earlier, that we should have the back of one another when it comes to this kind of aggregate discussion. I wish people had had my back last year when I was the only one that voted against the Olympia pit. And I did so because I spent hours at the U of T with the chair of hydrogeology trying to figure out whether this was a good thing or a bad thing. And I said it was a bad thing because there was no water. And lo and behold, last summer, there's a report came out that Orangeville is lacking water. Ta-da! I wish people had done the same amount of work that I had. What I'm getting at is the people at Green Lake did that kind of work. They kept us informed all the way. We didn't have any official meetings at all, but they had connections with our staff. They asked questions. They got answers. And to my knowledge, and we have representatives from Lafarge here tonight, correct me if I'm wrong, that first of all, the results of what their agreement is went to MNR, and they can't sign off on it because we haven't changed the zoning yet. But they have said by email to Lafarge they're willing to accept the new changes to the site plan, which are changes that they wanted. And secondly, the Conservation Authority has signed off. And believe me, I know how difficult that is because we had one pit that was at the end of its road, and I don't know how long, Mal, did it take us to get that pit, years and years and years. But they're satisfied with what has happened with the Green Lake Association. And I don't know all of the ins and outs of what that association is. What I do know is that, first of all, it fits what we have to do as a town with respect to this particular pit. And it also fits to what the people in that particular pit got, whether it was the best they could get or whether they don't think it was a good thing but they signed off. I don't think so. Dave and Richard were pretty clear that they were pleased, and in order to make sure that we knew that they were happy with this, they went to every single individual and had them sign a piece of paper that they were happy with what was going on, delegated here, told us that. And so from my perspective, and that's what we're up here doing, we all have our own perspective, but I think everything's been followed properly, and in this particular case, it's unique. It won't happen on the next one, believe me. And I'll be down at U of T again, and I'll be fighting it again. But in this particular case, I honestly believe that we've done a good job, and they've done a good job. So I will not be supporting this. I think we should move on.
Okay. Councilor Groves.
Thank you. Through you to Brandon. Brandon, I thought I heard through Mr. Sinclair said an air quality study was not done.
Through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor Groves, that's incorrect. An air quality impact study was submitted with the applications. It was reviewed not only by the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change as part of the Aggregate Resources Act license application, but it was also retained by our peer review consultant retained on behalf of the town. Both review parties determined that that study is accurate, and the conclusions and recommendations contained in that document are satisfactory.
Okay. So, I mean, air quality is a huge factor in, especially in these aggregate industry, logistics, those types of industry. I'm surprised that 70 meters was, that there was no impacts on air quality when you're talking 70 meters. I can tell you, and I hate to bring this up, but Canadian Tire was a prime example for my residents. All these studies were done. Everything pointed to the fact that there were no impacts on residents. Air quality was done. Noise was done. All of these things were done. In fact, they got an MZO that trumps any process. And I will tell you, my residents, they still live with those impacts. And so, you know, I hear what you're saying. I hear what Mr. Sinclair is saying. And all I'm looking for is, and I'm not sure what the hurry is to approve this, but asking for some more work to be done or questions to be answered or clarifications to be provided, I don't think that that is a huge ask. And I thought I heard Councillor Shaughnessy said we're looking at 12 years, so I don't know that there's a big rush to approve this, and I don't see a huge problem in just addressing what the delegates' concerns are. And if you sit down with Mr. Sinclair and address all these things and he's satisfied that he's satisfied with the answers that you will provide to him, then fine. But I don't think that there's a big rush in moving this forward. So I second the referral, and I am going to support the referral. Thank you.
Councillor Shaughnessy, I know you've spoken twice, but you've moved it. So if you have any questions, I'll give you the floor.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm just making up for the meeting I wasn't here at. Sorry. Anyways, just to, so the audience understands, air quality, it's a modeling. It's not actually on site doing air quality testing, which is what Councillor Groves and myself have been advocating for on site to actually know what's going on. Because I can tell you sometimes I go up Highway 10 and I can't even see for the dust. It's just, it's not a whiteout, it's a sandout. But what I want to say here is the main reason the cottagers relinquished was that they didn't want to go to the OMB. And they were hoping that the town would do its job and then they wouldn't have to go. But they didn't want to go to the OMB was what they told me. And that's fair enough. But it seems to be that our residents always on these aggregates have to go to the OMB. Because there are things that need to be done. There needs to be more work done. The industry knows it takes them 8 to 10 years to, from start to finish to get something through. That's the norm. I've gone to all the conferences. I've heard it. I understand it. That's the norm. So they just told me this is four. So I'm saying, what's the rush? The only time I hear about land compatibility in the report submitted by, because it says submitted by, Brandon Ward, is actually in the comment section. But in the body of the report, on the 17 pages, there's no mention of the sensitive land use or the compatibility issue. I take issue with that. As somebody who's trying to be fair between residents and aggregate, I've tried to give them a break, but they've even told me at the conferences they can do things better. This was an opportunity to do things better. So I understand the Green Lake College cottagers when they came here. I listened to the audio. I heard it. It was a little bit of kumbaya on council's part, but really they got a couple of things that they wanted, and they didn't want to stand there and fight anymore and spend another 9 years negotiating with Lafarge. So they gave in and got the best that they could. So the main reason, they didn't want to go to the OMB. Anyways, there's no sense in beating this. I think it should go back. Mr. St. Clair is the gentleman who helped create those rules that our staff are supposed to be working with. And if he says there's a problem, I believe him, there's a problem. And I've really worked hard on this and read it all and actually had my big, my OP out over the whole weekend, going through it, trying to find. It's interesting, I'll just bring note here that in MHBC, when we first brought this forward, no mention of Kettle Lakes. The cottagers didn't know they were sitting on a Kettle Lake. But I realized they were sitting on a Kettle Lake, but there was no mention in any reports. I noticed in this one there's a mention of Kettle Lake, but it was missing from the original ones. So, you know what? We should... Let's go back and get some information. Let Lafarge sit here for a little bit. It won't kill them. And let's go back and get some extra information. That's all we're asking for. Thank you.
All right. I will call the question to vote. All in favor? Recorded vote. Okay. Pass it over to the clerk.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called. All those in favor, please stand. Councillor Shaughnessy and Councillor Groves. All those opposed? Councillor Mezzapelli, Councillor Innes, Councillor DeBoer, Councillor McClure, Mayor Thompson, Councillor Beffert, Councillor Downey, Councillor DeBoer. Motion fails.
Okay. I will now go back to the original motion. Is there any questions on it? I think we've debated it enough. Recorded vote has been called. I will pass this over to the clerk.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote has been called. All those in favor, please stand. Councillor Mezzapelli, Councillor Innes, Councillor McClure, Mayor Thompson, Councillor Beffert, Councillor Downey, Councillor DeBoer. All those opposed, please stand. Councillor Shaughnessy, Councillor Groves. Motion carries.
Okay, I will now call upon Michelle Van Noyt, Director of Community Services, Calden, to approach the podium to provide a presentation concerning Exchange Collaboration Data Project. As you know, Michelle, you have 10 minutes. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me here tonight. As the mayor said, my name is Michelle Vino. I'm Director of Community Resources at Caledon Community Services, and I will keep it to 10 minutes, I promise. I'm here specifically to share with you some work that's being done through the Exchange Collaborative. The Exchange Collaborative is a collaborative of 18 social service and service club organizations, a community hub located in Bolton. And over the past 2 years, we've been looking at some data specific to Caledon. And I believe you all received a copy of this report. And so I'm going to take a few minutes to try to share a brief snapshot of it with you. This report is evidence-based material now that is specific to the viewpoints of Caledon residents living in the community and in your wards. So as I said, it was commissioned by the Exchange and funded through the Region of Peel. My clicker's not working. There we go. And it really provides information on social issues that exist in Caledon as seen by Caledon residents. And this data was collected by hundreds of Caledon residents over a period of time through a myriad of different ways. We had community consultations, an online survey, we were at community events, and then we had several focus groups. And people shared what their concerns were around social issues that existed in Caledon. Our specific reason for doing this was to try to find out what the issues were that were most important to people who were living in our community, because that is essentially the focus of the Exchange and our collaborative work. We're trying to help create a more coordinated approach across the community in regards to complex social issues. So as you're aware, Caledon demographics tell, you know, a portion of what's happening in our community, but they don't really tell us how people feel about living here and how they see programs and services affecting their day-to-day life. So it drawed the opinions from local residents, and it really helped us define and describe the kind of community that we're trying to aspire to be in our collaborative work, Caledon being a connected, accepted, engaging community for all. So just a quick snapshot, as I said, because the report is pretty complex, so I'm hoping that you have a chance to read it, because it is very, very evidence-based research now that you can use even in your work. But, you know, no surprise here what people value about Caledon. We kind of all know this already. A sense of safety, a small town feeling, great outdoor activities, the people, the close proximity to Toronto, sense of community, great events and programming, quiet and peacefulness, the mix of urban and rural. So those are the things that are, you know, pretty much the selling points for Caledon that we all experience every day. These responses are some of the key points that we pulled out of the report of things that people brought forward. So 48% of people felt that most people care about issues in Caledon. 63% felt there were opportunities to get involved, but that people didn't always get involved. Their neighbors didn't always take an interest. 40% reported that they needed help and they didn't know where to look. 70% said they had to leave Caledon at least at some time in the past 12 months to get the help that they needed. 54% felt there was not enough employment opportunities. Over the previous year in which we did the survey work, 44% were unable to afford things they needed, and 32% were unable to pay their bills. 55% felt the cost of living was unreasonable, and most importantly, 1 in 5 that we surveyed felt isolated. And that's not surprising because of the geographical area in Caledon and where services and programs are located. This is probably one of the most important pieces of information that we learned from the report. These are issues that were important to the people who answered our surveys. So overall, we see in a real sense of people feeling a lack of supports and activities for really wide, diverse groups. So we've got children, teens, young adults, people with disabilities, seniors, newcomers. That's a big group of people living in Caledon. There was a feeling of lack of support and insufficient mental health and addiction services. Once again, isolation came up, and that was a key theme in pretty much everything that we found out through this report, is that there were a lot of people feeling isolated, even though there was this great sense of community in Caledon. Lack of affordable housing, growth and development that's not balanced, lack of employment opportunities, a real feeling of a gap between the rich and the poor, and then lack of affordable, nutritious food. So for our work that we do within the exchange and the collaborative with all our service partners, we're trying to look at key themes and things that are happening in our community that we can actually have impact collectively with. So we know that Caledon is growing and changing really quickly, and what this report identified, that in this process of growth and change, people who once in this community might have been very easily welcomed and felt that they were supported are not feeling that way anymore. More specifically, newcomers, seniors, youth, people with disabilities, and others are feeling left out of the mix, and feeling as though the community is failing them in providing supports and services that they need. Also, a key theme was that there are those who are interested in becoming more involved and making a contribution, but they can't always find the opportunities that they seek in the ways that they seek them. So the report identified specific approaches that Caledon residents, not us, Caledon residents identified to be key steps in making sure that we're able to achieve this kind of aspirational goal in our community. Four priority actions: people positively interacting with one another, supporting one another, understanding and caring about the challenges that others are facing, and then people being aware of the services and activities that are available in the community. So there's really important implications that have been presented as a result of this report. They really show the need for a space like the Exchange, a place where people can come together to not only access supports and programs, but also can come together to give back to the community and to understand their piece in the puzzle when it comes to how a community is built and how a community can get better. It also presents some challenges for us in that many of the people that we are providing service to or we are working with are still feeling isolated and disconnected. And so we have work to do within our collaborative of trying to find ways to make sure that we're addressing all kinds of people in a variety of ways and that we're able to overcome some of the obstacles that do exist in Caledon. So once this report was completed, we looked at all of the themes that came through, and there are many. I have only just touched on like one tiny little bit of it. And we were overwhelmed at first. We were like, holy moly, there's a lot of stuff in this report. What are we going to focus on? Because we're only 18 organizations, and we can't do everything all at once. But we do know we can do something, and we can do something better because we're doing it together. And so we work with the data consultants, and we work with our leadership team and the partners, and we developed kind of a tiered approach to how we were going to weigh out what's our best bang for the buck going to be right off the bat. And so we set a clear path together, and we decided that we are going to specifically focus over the next probably about 3 years around the themes of isolation, access, mental health, and prevention with a system transformation lens, specifically targeting youth between the ages of 12 and 18. So we didn't go with newcomers. We didn't go with seniors. We went with youth because that was something that we felt we could have the most impact right away. So our next step is we've created some short and long-term projects, and we're all working together to kind of see how we can make those play out, and we're beginning to now measure them from a system level. So not just how is the work I'm doing making a difference, but are we making a change in our community overall as a result of our collective work? What we would ask of you, and I will say that the town of Caledon sits at the leadership level with the Exchange. Heather Savage is our representative, and she has been key and integral in making sure that the synergies that are happening both with the town of Caledon and with the Exchange work are really coming to fruition. I'll give you an example. There is there's youth initiatives that are happening at the town, and there's youth initiatives that are happening at the Exchange collaborative level. We were kind of working, doing the same things without neither of us knowing that the other was actually working on those same projects. And so we came together, town of Caledon staff and Exchange leadership team, and really kind of had an opportunity to work to figure out who was best to do what. and could we partner together to do some things? And as a result of that, we've seen movement on project pieces that we hadn't been able to move before. So for us, it's key that we have partnerships and strong collaborative relationships with all types of service providers. Most of the people that sit on the collaborative are social service, but we now also have the Peel District School Board, the Caledon OPP, the TRCA, and so having those different multi-sectors come together will only help us achieve greater success in our work with youth. So I would ask you, and I have 17 seconds left, so I would ask you in your work to make sure that you're aware of what's happening within the work at the Exchange Collaborative level, read the report, and also ensure that our efforts are working in synergy and in partnership rather than in their silos. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. But I have some questions here first. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Mayor Thompson. Just more of a comment than a question. I just want to thank you for the work that you do on the collaborative. I think we both know that partnerships and conversation are of the utmost importance, and that's how we get things done. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I do have one question. In terms of duplicities, where are you seeing the most across the leadership board? Like, I think, you know, the goal at the end of the day would be to eliminate those in order to gain more efficiencies in the community. Where are you seeing those duplicities?
Okay, so I think when we started to work with Heather, we learned of the work that was being done around inventory of services and youth summits and those types of things. And we were kind of doing those same things in tandem, not really recognizing that each of us was kind of putting our efforts towards that. And as a result of that, we had done some work and the town had done some work, and we're both about to embark on the opposite. So we just switched papers, basically. We switched papers and we switched teams. We brought them together, and we really took a chunk of time that both of us would have spent investing, and now we now don't have to do that. So I think we're further ahead because each of us is bringing something different to the table. We're a lot farther in some ways than the town actually is when it comes to youth planning. They're a lot farther in other ways. So we complement each other really well, and that bringing that relationship together has been immensely helpful for us to move our agenda forward.
Thank you, and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Good job getting in under the tent.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Michelle, thank you for your presentation. Excellent presentation, by the way. And you certainly have brought to light a number of very important issues, and it may be things that some of us don't even want to hear, that there's a problem here. And I know for years and years and years, Caledon Community Services, even prior to Monty coming on board, has always said there are a number of working poor people in our community. There's a perception out there, and it has always been out there, that there are no poor people in Caledon. I'm going to tell you, I have a lot of my residents who are struggling, and you're absolutely right. Some of them can't even pay their bills on time. Some of them, their power has been cut off. Some of them have no heat in the wintertime, and they have to resort to Caledon Community Services to help out with your heating program and whatever else. So thank you for bringing all of those points forward. I think it is a serious problem, and it is a problem right across Peel Region. We are not indifferent to these issues. They are here, and I will tell you that as the community grows, these challenges will continue to grow. We have a lot of social challenges in the region of Peel, and Caledon is not immune to those social challenges. And again, as we grow, we're going to encounter more of those issues. One of the things that Peel Region is fighting for is their fair share. And I can tell you that we're underfunded in the region of Peel. We are also underfunded here in the town of Caledon. So I want to thank you for doing that. One of the things that you talked about is people not feeling, they're feeling isolated. They're not feeling welcome. It's not very welcoming. There's no inclusiveness here. And I can tell you, I had a resident call, and actually I met with her. She's a young lady, just got married about 2 years ago. And one of the inquiries she made was about the welcome wagon. We used to have a welcome wagon here. And when I moved into my home 22 years ago, I had the lady from, I think her name was Joan, from the Welcome Wagon. She brought me a whole basket of things, information, brochures, pamphlets, that told me all of the services and the different organizations that were available in the community. We don't have that anymore. I directed her to the town of Caledon. There is nothing. There's nothing on our website, and a lot of residents, that's the problem. They don't know what services are offered. They don't know where to go for things, and so that is a problem. I'm not sure how we fix that, but this has been a problem for a long time. So thank you for pointing that out. The other thing that you talked about was the youth. And I will tell you, we certainly need to put our money where our mouth is, because we talk about youth and we talk about youth, and there are a number of challenges with the youth. Mental health, in my opinion, and it has been at the forefront both at the Region Appeal, the Province of Ontario, with respect to mental health. And the concern that I have is the age. When you're talking about these youth, grade 7, that's a concern, because if that's not addressed, what is going to happen to them as they get older? Does it continue? Does it get worse? What do we do with it? You know, there are a number of things at home. I don't know that we're doing enough work.
Councillor Groves, I've got to get you to asking questions, please.
Mayor Thompson, please. I'd like to make comments on this, because she did present some very valuable points, and it is a concern in our community. And again, so through you, what
thank you.
Sorts of initiatives are you doing with the rest of, I know we have, the OPP has a suicide prevention committee, and everybody's talking about mental health. So are you collaborating with those committees and other folks, including the Region Appeal, on the mental health piece?
Yes, so the work that we're doing through the Exchange Collaborative, we have several of those collaborative partners sitting on the board, CMHA, Caledon OPP, Caledon District School Board. There's, you know, a whole myriad of different partnerships, but we specifically have identified projects, as I mentioned, that are framed around that context. One of them is mental health, and so we have a year one and a year two project, which is actually year one going to about 2 years and then 3 years out. For me to go through all those right now would be another probably 10-minute presentation, but there is a key component to mental health with the specific lens of all partners taking a piece of that on, so that it's more systems transformation rather than one organization bringing in a mental health counselor in an office. It has to be bigger than that, because we know Caledon, you know, we are lacking mental health services, and we want to do something that will really make a change long term, so that kid that's in grade 7 who's having issues around mental health will be supported amongst many, many different players in the community, so that by the time they get to 18, you know, they're not experiencing any of those challenges.
Okay, so would you say that funding is an issue for you in terms of delivering maybe some of the services that you need to deliver?
Well, yes, funding is always an issue. I'm not going to say no. Monty's sitting back there. He's saying say yes, but it definitely is. I mean, Caledon Community Services is the backbone organization for the Exchange and the collaborative work that we're doing. But, you know, it does take time to make change in the community and to fund collaborative work, data development, and ongoing measurement. You know, it's not always the pretty thing to fund, right? But it makes sense to build evidence to fund programs that will have lasting effect. So one of our long-term plans is, you know, to bring funding in for more mental health services, but obviously that has several different funders coming to the table. That is, it is something that is always on the table for us.
Is United Way at the table with you?
United Way is a funder of the Exchange and the Exchange collaborative work, yes.
Okay, so most of these services that you provide anyway, they're really, it's the Region Appeal who funds these programs, the social service programs, transportation, all of these health services. So my suggestion, and of course I know you've been at the Region Appeal, and certainly whatever we can do around this table, the regional councillors, including the mayor, is to advocate for more funding for you through the Region Appeal. All of us are advocating for funding. Mississauga is advocating for funding. They have a larger demographics or a larger population there. Brampton is doing the same thing. So I think that maybe we need to step up and ask for more funding over there at the Region Appeal. And again, we get the challenge where Peel is saying, hey, we know what? We're underfunded overall. So again, thank you. And I know that Hazel McCallion, she was always preaching against duplication. It's expensive. It's resources going out the window. So I agree with your collaboration and breaking down the silos. I also believe, and I've always said this, an ounce of prevention, it's better than a pound of cure. So I think moving forward, we look at how we can prevent these things, and I don't have the answers. So hopefully the experts do. Thank you.
Councillor DeBoer.
Thank you. Good presentation. And I think sitting around this table is one of the things that's very enlightening about sitting here is that you do get to learn about what really is going on in Caledon. I run into people all the time who say that we don't have the issues. The reality is, and from other areas too, they'll say, oh, everything in Caledon is rosy, like it's really good. No, and we do have the same issues as any other community, and it's how we try to address them and try to look at unique ways. And I think that with CCS and the exchange and then this collaborative group that you've got together, you say it right? And is a unique way of trying to address the problem and bringing everybody together, trying to figure out who's doing what and trying to make it efficient. So I did hear that you have Heather Savage as a part of the group. Is there anybody else from the town? I don't know if staff can tell me. Is there anybody else involved with the exchange, and is her capacity there representative of the organization?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councilor DeBoer, it's just Heather Savage that's on the team.
Okay. Because when I read through the results of the study, some of them are communication pieces that maybe we aren't delivering as an organization, is what I've seen. Like, what's going on in Caledon? What programs are we delivering? So my question, and I would, we probably have a resolution that for receipt of the delegation, but I would like to ask that the information in your delegation be referred to strategic initiatives for some work around even the advertising piece to connect with what gaps are you finding from the seniors, from the youth, what are they missing, and do we have the ability to address that within our website? Do we have a way to connect on our website for new residents, so that we can make a connection from something very easy on our homepage, new residents, what services are provided as a new resident? What do you need to know? And I think we could have some conversations, and maybe the results from your study tells us what are new residents looking for when they come to this community, come to Caledon. What are they looking for? What information do they need? And I think those are pieces that are very important. And I know one of the things for a lot of the rural residents is even have something there that says how a septic tank works and how a private well works, so that we don't get calls from when the water doesn't work, why the region turned the water off when you're on a well. So great idea, great work, and I would like to add that.
Councillor DeBoer, I think Mr. Arbuckle is going to take it as direction, and Michelle and Mr. Arbuckle can follow up and see what they can do to collaboration, so thank you for that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Councillor Befford.
Thank you very much, and I won't take long, but I think there's an element of what I'm going to talk about that I think needs further discussion. On your second last page, your pages aren't numbered, but it says, to succeed as a community hub. I'd like to change that to succeed as community hubs. Because I represent people in Ward 1. We're a long way away from you. Mm-hmm. We have the basis of AA, ADA, seniors. We have a full commercial kitchen at one of our churches in Callan Village. I don't think we're making the most value of our community to blend with the exchange on the other side. We can use your bus on a rare occasion. People don't even know your buses are available. So whatever we can do in the future, because all the information you have is equally as important in Ward 1, in Caledon East, in Caledon Village, in Alton, as it is over in Bolton. So maybe we could do something about that. And I know, Monty, we did visit, and we did start some discussions, and they kind of went from there, but maybe it's time to look at that. Because we have people on our side of town who fit your comments exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think it's time we work with you to broaden that exchange if we could. Now, don't mind helping. Thanks.
Wonderful. Councillor Misapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Michelle, for your presentation. It was very good. And I would agree. The general intent and push and focus of this is just not to accept the status quo, to find out where there's gaps, and to enhance and to fill those gaps wherever possible. So I thank CCS for undertaking this, identifying those gaps, and prioritizing some key focus areas to move forward on. I just wanted to say, it was mentioned a couple times about that, and again, recognizing full well, we need to do better and pursue that continuously. To say that there's nothing that the town offers is not accurate or fair. And I think to our staff, we need to make sure that they get credit, because on the town webpage, there is a New to Caledon mm-hmm. page. And it identifies everything from police and fire, community calendar, parks and rec, garbage. I don't know if there's wells to Councillor DeBoer's point, but a number of things. And could we make it better? Absolutely. But I do want to make the point that that is there, and our staff, I believe, are trying really hard and working really hard to fill the gaps as well on our side. The one question I had is, one thing struck me on your list of key focus areas, and that was isolation. Can you speak to what is the cause of that? Is that like geographical isolation, lack of transportation as isolation, services, or all of the above?
All of the above.
Okay.
Yeah. And so isolation came through in all of the themes that we were talking about. And so, you know, we're looking at it from the lens of, you could be isolated because of your geography. You could be isolated because you don't have access to transportation. You could be isolated because you don't have supports. You could be isolated because you don't have access to friends and family. There's a myriad of different things. And so one of the key pieces to our work moving forward is to ensure that we are addressing some of those things from a geography perspective. The exchange is known as Caledon's Community Hub, but our actual tagline is Beyond Four Walls. So we don't want people to think that the exchange is only that one building in Bolton. We don't want that. We want Caledon to be those exchange hubs that are spread throughout geographically, so we can start to address isolation from that perspective, but also from some of the other things, like making sure that people can access the supports that they need, when they need, for what they need. And so that it really is a huge issue. It was the one that we really, it came clear, it was the clearest thing that we've seen in that report from day one, and from in all of our conversations, there was a piece of isolation in kind of every comment that someone made. Mm-hmm. In some sort of way.
Okay. Just a suggestion for what it's worth, and I'm sure that this is probably something that you're undertaking anyways. I always look to low-hanging fruit, easy wins, that type of thing. And I would venture to say that some of the gaps are just lack of knowledge, yep. awareness, information, and that to me is the low-hanging fruit. There may be a program,
yep.
or there may be a web page that can direct people, and to do what we can to enhance that education and awareness is an easy win that I believe has the ability to go a long, long way.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again.
Thank you. The isolation issue is what I'm blown away is, a lot of times it's right in the urban settings. It's the neighbors not knowing your neighbor. You know, one thing in the rural community is maybe you're isolated for transportation, but you got your neighborhood busybody, which is the oldest social media going. Yeah. But I mean, it is what is unique. I think that's the one thing that we need to do, is get out and know your neighbor. And you know, it's neighborhood watch is one thing, you know, for, you know, theft and everything, but know your neighbor and what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that's, but I think you've had a good presentation. I think you've stimulated a lot of council discussion, and I think you're on the right track, and collaboration is never enough. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Just to the nature of the next two presentations, I'm going to jump the queue. I got some lovely people sitting in the back corner waiting patiently, but I know it's another good news story. So how will we get it to come forward first, if we could? So I will call upon Kevin Junior, Reverend Ron Kelly, and Nicole Jeffrey from the North Peel Community Church to approach the podium to provide a presentation concerning Black History Month. If that's okay with council, I just thank you. Thank you for coming. So is Kevin, you've been here all night. Is that 10 minutes and everything else? Just go when you're ready. Thank you so much.
Black History Month. Thank you for allowing, when I mention NPCC, I'm talking about North Peel Community Church, to speak to you about Black History Month. Our appreciation for the council to send us a copy of the Black History Month proclamation. NPCC has been a part of Caledon for decades. We have partnered on various initiatives and are blessed to have the support of council. We also celebrate Black History Month, and the year 2018 is no different. It is important to recognize that Black history is Canadian history. Black History Month is an opportunity for us as a nation to look back on trailblazers, celebrate the accomplishment we are experiencing today, and plot the future course for our youth to follow. A future that will see them as leaders who will carry our great country forward. During this time, we reach back into our past and do what we do well. We tell stories. We make sure that our youth are aware that they can be successful and that failing is not an option. I look forward, I will also ask our youth leader to speak about Black History Month activities in North Peel Community Church.
Thank you and good evening, Mayor Thompson and members of council. As you can see on this screen, point two and point three briefly talks about what we do here at North Peel Community Church for Black History Month. And just to elaborate a little bit more on that slide, every Friday in the month of February, we celebrate a cultural evening that will have food, music, art, and fun. The environment allows youth of all ages to learn of the major contributions made by Black people. At the end of each day, each youth that attends should leave feeling empowered and believing that they can become a leader and make a difference in today's society. So this year's theme, as you can see on the screen, was chosen by our youth, as well as the flyer was completed by our youth. And they decided on a topic where they wanted to focus on a lot of the mighty men and women of God, as well as focusing on our Canadian trailblazers as well. Some of the activities that we have, and many of them are developed in such a way that provides leadership, development of leadership skills, as well as giving them an opportunity to lead in many of the activities. So we've done different things like such as game nights where they had an opportunity to play Jeopardy and learn at the same time. We've had guest speakers that have attended. One of them was from the CFL, Matthew Buckner. And we also do movie nights, so on and so forth. On our next slide, we just want to show one of the success of one of our youths. So we have seen the success in the development of our youth. They are actively engaged in our community events. And a member of our youth from our group was employed as a page in the House of Commons. So at this time, I just want to again just invite each and every one of you this coming Friday for our grand finale. It's going to be set up as a Smithsonian where there'll be different exhibits and an opportunity to learn different things. And you can learn, enjoy, and taste as well. So this will be on Friday, February the 23rd, and there will be refreshments included. Thank you.
I might be making some good refreshments myself. I'm not sure what I'm going to cook yet, but I know Jennifer will be there to taste my cooking in particular. Mayor and members of council, it's great to be back speaking with you. The proclamation that was made for Caledon, it speaks very clearly about what I consider to be a very important decade, a decade that the United Nations decided is donated to or designated to people of African descent. We move forward where the Prime Minister himself, or Premier, has identified that specifically within the Black community, there are a number of challenges. And those challenges must be addressed. One of the things that they've done is they've identified the Anti-Racism Directorate, which is doing some really good work right now, and people from across the province and beyond are tapping into them. A couple of friends of mine that sits in the directorate give me regular updates, and I think it's some really groundbreaking pieces that's going on. Steps are being made to address those issues. But I'd also like to throw it out here that at the local level, we have to also identify that the demographics in Caledon is changing. And the presentation that we received just a moment ago, it speaks to that. So we have to be prepared to now start addressing some of those issues at our level. And I think she's gone, but we're definitely going to have to connect because we're going the same direction, and it's an opportunity for us to collaborate on some of these issues. Over the years, when we hear of Black History Month, we hear of individuals south of the border. We hear about Dr. King and all these great individuals, and they've done great work. But what we want to do is to focus on Canadians, Black Canadians, because we've got people that's been doing good stuff, and as Pastor Kelly said, Black history is Canadian history. I've got up there the number 2 Construction Battalion, which I consider one of Canada's best kept secret. And here's an all-Black battalion that had to fight racism here at home before they were allowed to go abroad to spill their blood on foreign soil, right? They were told that they were Black, they were undisciplined, and because of that, they can't join the military. And when they actually were allowed to join the military, they didn't give them rifles like other soldiers. They gave them pickaxes and shovels. So they go dig trenches and build roads for the real soldiers to fight on. In 2016, a stamp was dedicated to them because of the excellent work that they did. Viola Desmond, a wonderful woman, did great business. And the emphasis with Viola is people speak of Rosa Parks, but she's known as the Canadian Rosa Parks because Viola Desmond experienced racism 9 years before Rosa Parks came on the scene, but nobody's talking about that, right? So we have a rich history, and I think it's time for us to really start looking at that. She will be on the $10 bill this year, and another piece of discrimination that we can see is they said that she would be the first Canadian woman on a bill. But somehow, last year, they kind of snuck somebody else in there. But that's another thing, right? Africville. I had the opportunity to go to the site where Africville was. And this was one of the worst things that I've ever seen in my life, where individuals had their homes, and when the government saw this was prime real estate, they made sure that the houses were knocked down and moved the residents in the garbage truck that earlier that day was picking up garbage and moving around. Now, the government recently apologized for the inhumane treatment. But again, this is a piece of our history, and apologizing isn't making it right. Jean Augustine, wonderful lady. Because of Jean, we have Black History Month nationally. She's the first African-Canadian woman elected to the House of Commons. And, you know, she tells the story of how she was able to get all three parties together to be able to say, yes, unanimously, let's have Black History Month nationally across Canada. Wonderful work that has been done by her. And she's got a high school here in Peel for the great work that she's done. A friend of mine, Michael Tulloch, we grew up together in church, going through church leadership like we have at North Peel Community Church. And now he is the first Black judge appointed to the Ontario Court of Appeal. And he's going through right now making sure that this carding issue that's been plaguing a lot of our communities, that he's trying to fix this in the best way that he can. A wonderful and smart guy. Link. Right? The first Black MP federal cabinet minister. Again, the first Black person to be a vice-regal position in Canada. Wonderful, humble man, very soft-spoken, but when he spoke, people listened. A stamp was unveiled to him this month. You knew I had to throw myself in there someplace, right? The wonderful Mikhail Jean, first Black Governor General of Canada. A very wonderful individual, warm, welcoming, and she speaks and emphasizes freedom as a central part of Canadian identity, right? So it's important for us to understand again that we experience what we're doing today because of those trailblazers that came before us, and we're standing on their shoulders. And again, I want to emphasize, Black history is Canadian history. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to come tonight and just talk a little bit. I've been in Caledon for a number of years, and I haven't seen Black history being celebrated. I think we're there. I think we have enough critical mass to be able to do that. And I'm looking to council to lead the way. Right, and in doing that, we've partnered on a number of initiatives before. And as we move forward to 2019 Black History Month, I would like to be able to come back here and say, yeah, this is what we're doing collaboratively. Right? So before February 2019, okay. Whenever you're ready, just let me know, let us know, and we... And we are ready and able to be able to take us to the next level. And just down at the bottom, there's a number of young people that's doing some research. They're actually going through and they're sharing their knowledge with each other. And again, it's a diverse group. So let's take advantage of that and see how we can make our youth a better. Because again, this nation, we're not going to be around forever. Doug, you know what I'm talking about, right? You know, been in the school system for a long time. We need to develop these youth so that they can be the mayor of Caledon in the future. So, again, I want to thank you very much for allowing us to come in. And next week, Friday, if you are available, the 23rd, please come on in and celebrate with us and continue to celebrate Black History Month with us as we move forward.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. I don't know if there are questions or comments, but Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. They are comments.
I had a question.
Councillor DeBoer is going to ask all the questions for me, and I'll make the comments. How's that? Thank you for your presentation, and thank you for coming in and recognizing the need for us here in Caledon to celebrate Black History Month. I think you're absolutely correct when everyone else is celebrating Black History Month south of us, that we do the same here. And Kevin, you certainly touched on a point where to talk about the diversities here in Caledon. And as our community grows, and it will continue to grow, you will continue to see those diversities and the increase in diversity. This country, one of the reasons why I think it's the greatest country in the world is because it is diverse. And it recognizes diversity. And you know, part of the problem, and I'm going to tell you, part of the problem, and most people won't say it because they sort of hide behind it, is us folks need to move forward, get the chip off our shoulders, and say, you know what? Color doesn't define us. Politics doesn't define who I am. What defines me is my character, my abilities to achieve whatever it is I want to achieve. And that's the stuff we need to teach our young Black children. Color does not define them. There's no limit to what they can do based on their abilities. And people like yourselves as leaders in the church, you're a great role model to do that. And Kevin, I was going to suggest that you get in touch with CCS, and we also have a youth group or a youth center in Bolton, Chess Place, and we're welcome. If you would have us at one of your gathering or one of your youth gathering, we would be happy to come out and speak to your youth and invite them to the youth center, because one of the things that we look for is inclusiveness. You don't want a group over here and a group over there. You want that inclusivity. And so I'm happy to come with some of our board members to one of your youth initiative and invite your youth to join the youth that come out to that center and participate with them. You know, I guess I'm sort of an anomaly in the whole, when you look at Peel Region's council, you would think that there would be more ethnics from Mississauga or Brampton. Well, I'm the only one there, and I'm from Caledon, and very proud to say that. And I will tell you, folks in my community, the people who elected me, they don't see my color. They see me. They see Annette, the person. And I think that that's the message we need to bring to our children, to others in our community, is it's not the color of the person. It's the person. And if you're going to do things that's not right, well, you're going to be paying the penalties, and there's, you know, consequences to all of these things, to all of your actions. And so, you know, the whole issue with carding and whatever, you talk about some of those folks in here, Kevin, the Governor General, the Lincoln Alexander, Michelle Jean, Jean Augustine. These are people that are trying to move us forward and to take us forward. Then you get some people to the south over there, our neighbors in the south, are trying to move us backwards. So thank you for coming, and thank you for recognizing the need to celebrate Black History Month. I think that, you know, again, Canada is so diverse. There are celebrations in every culture. And so we recognize and respect each other. And I think at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. So thank you again. And what time is it on February 23rd? 7:30? 7:30. Thank you. So I will try to make it to that. And please let me know. We're happy to invite you. Well, you have an invitation to our center. It's opened on Friday and Saturday from 6 to 11, and on Sundays from 6 to 10. So this is an open invitation to you. Please let me know, and we can certainly accommodate you there, and the youth can come and have a great time at the center. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. That was my question, is it 7:30? Because you skirted around it. And it's this Friday. This Friday.
Right.
Don't next Friday. Next Friday you'll be
by myself.
Well, no, Kevin will be there. He'll be there. They're going to be there. Just a question, and you talked about Kevin next year wanting to do something more. Is that what I gathered?
Yeah. I think there's an opportunity now for us to not just come to council and speak, but we can do something in the community. And, you know, there are so many things we can do. And let's explore options and get one and go with it.
Well, I'd be interested in working on one with you. Gordon, I sit on the library board. Library board's got people coming in and out all the time and an opportunity to displays. There's probably literature that relates.
Yeah.
At the next meeting, we'll maybe bring it up and see if there isn't some way that we could do that. And the benefit to it is we got libraries throughout all of Caledon.
Amen.
So we can take it around and show exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
We're
so I'll talk at the next meeting. Gord, remind me, and we'll do that. Thanks.
Councillor Ennis.
Thank you. Thank you to all three of you for coming today and presenting. Last year, I had the honor of representing the regional chair at PAMA while we celebrated Black History Month, but most importantly because the Lieutenant Governor was there. And she was there to honor the exhibit that was there that outlined the 2nd Battalion that you spoke about today. So I'm well aware of that history, and it is a rich history that we do need to showcase. And I was proud that PAMA chose that initiative to put forward. So anything that we can do as council, in especially from regional council's perspective, in pulling together those types of exhibits and information so that we can share them not only in Brampton and Mississauga, but to bring them up to Caledon and to share them with our community, more than happy to help do that as well. And I look forward to being there on Friday, and I will bring my kids because I think it's a great opportunity for them to learn and grow and be part of this community as well. So thank you for the invitation.
The display that was at PAMA, I can get that in Caledon.
Yes.
Anytime.
I think that's something that we should look forward to maybe doing for next year. I think that would be a great initiative for the community.
Put it in the hallway here for
absolutely.
February.
Done.
Okay. Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor Thompson. I had the honor and privilege of speaking this morning at the Region Appeal for Black History Month celebration, and it was an honor and very significant for me because I was able to share my own family's history in regards to Canadian Black history. And I was really happy to see some of the people that you highlighted on your reel. My grandmother and her family are from Nova Scotia and came to Nova Scotia in the late 1700s via the Underground Railroad. My grandfather was part of the Black Seaman Car Porters in Toronto, recruited to work for the CN in 1924, and created the first union for Black men and women in Ontario. So I was happy to share that story, and I'm happy to share the link with you of that presentation as well. Definitely there is a few puzzled looks in the crowd when I started to speak, as there often are. But that is the diversity of our history. In Canada, my cousins are descendants of the Shad family, Mary Ann Shad, who has a very, very rich history in North America. And their father was her son, Thomas Shad. So, you know, it's all around us. And I was sharing the mic with some amazing speakers this morning. Marva Wisdom, Joseph Smith, amazing connections to be had. And I think all of those people would be quite happy to get involved. Everyone, like just the synergies that were happening, the conversations that were happening, how we can help each other, how we can help each other bring all of these things together and get the information out to our community. The theme of today's event was diversity is being invited to the dance, inclusion is being invited to dance. And at the end of my presentation, I brought it back to clearing the dance floor and eliminating the barriers that we set up sometimes ourselves in our own communities, and the fact that there are many barriers that preclude people from even getting to the dance, per se. So I thank you for coming this evening and would be happy to share some of those contacts that I made today. And the presentation was live streamed, so like amazing speakers. I you know, you could definitely share that presentation with your youth. You can watch it online. Just great contacts. So I'd be happy to share that with you offline.
And that's all the questions, but I will have to say I want to thank you for coming in and sharing. You are a great asset to our community. And thank you so much for bringing this in and sharing it. And Kevin, I'm sorry about getting it to you. Unfortunately, the internet was down at
it
home,
happens.
And I had nothing to get to you, so I missed the Sunday. But we got the next Sunday.
We got there.
So I apologize. I should have had it to you a lot sooner than
no
we did.
No problem,
but
sir.
I think lessons learned going forward. I think there's a lot more we can do for years to come. Yeah. So thank you so much for everybody.
If I could just add, sir, James Bolton. Public school. My granddaughter goes there right now, and she came home one day and she called me GP. Right? GP, you got to follow the North Star. And I'm looking at her. She goes, the Underground Railroad. They were told about the North Star. You got to follow the North Star. Then she went to her mom and she goes, slavery is illegal. Right? She's 6 years old. James Bolton is doing a good job, and I think we've got to look at the schools that's actually telling the story, because Black history is Canadian history. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. I will now call on Corinne Clausen, representative of owner of JCKNG Holdings Company, and Claire Rietma, president of Rietma Consultants, to approach the podium to provide a presentation concerning development charges for JC Mini Storage, 7865 King Street. Yep, you have 10 minutes. Take her away, Craig.
Thank you very much, Mayor Thompson. And thank you to all the councillors for permitting us to present tonight. And thank you to the staff. The staff has been great over the last several months in providing a lot of answers to us. But we have a dilemma, a unique dilemma. We started the business in 1988. We bought the land in 86, went through the development and rezoning process, opened the doors literally 30 years ago. Back then, there was no DCs. There was no development charges back in those days. And I don't think my father, who signed the contract at that time with the town of Caledon, nor did Emile Cobb ever imagine there'd be DCs and we'd be sitting here 30 years later. But that is our reality. And why am I sharing this with you? Because we're a community business. Obviously, we're a for-profit corporation, but we serve the community. It's not just about brick and mortar. We have a number of people that come in. For the most part, it's a fun business. On other occasions, it's not so fun. There's people with a lot of serious problems, and that's why they seek self-storage. So we're not there just to rent out. We're there interacting with this community day in and day out. That community drives right by our door on Highway Regional Road 9, King Street West. And we've seen it. We've seen a lot of different things over the years. We also have seen through our own informal information gathering that there's a great need to expand. And our business is drive-up door. We're not multi-level. And it's a different kind of tenant, a different kind of person that has that need. They like to be able to drive in fast, take their time once they're in. Could be half a day, could be 5 minutes, variety of scenarios. And then they leave. Sometimes they come in every day. It's like a home away from home. So we adopted the philosophy recently, the last 2 years, that we are the friendly neighbor in the community, because that's essentially what has happened over 30 years. When we first built on the west side of Humber Station, there wasn't much around there. There was no subdivisions to the east of that or to the south of it. And so here we are, wanting to set our future in place over the next 3 years, if we can. $350,000 is a lot of money for development charge. But more importantly, we cannot pass that development charge on to our customers. We're not developers. We don't build houses. Often people will put a down payment on a house, and when that house is finished a year later, they're surprised with an additional fee of perhaps $25,000 in some cases. That's because the development charges had escalated at that time, and the developers have that ability to pass that on to their customer. It's in their contract. We are a market-driven business. It's all about supply and need. And so we're price sensitive. And so for that reason, we'd like to appeal to the council to review what will be presented to you now by our engineer, Claire Rietma. And he will also illustrate a specific example. There's many examples in municipalities that have dealt with a self-storage issue. We'd like to focus on one, and that's next, right next door to us. It's very real. It's very specific. They've gone through 2 years of long, laborious work. We'd like to propose maybe an interim proposition where we can be allowed to build in an economical fashion that serves our community, while the DC scenario is being reviewed. I understand that'll take about 18 months at the max. We're very happy to participate with that, however we can. But at this moment, we really need to move forward. So I'm going to pass the microphone over now to Claire Rietma. And before I do so, I'd like very much just to clarify something. And that was the good response from Deputy Treasurer Hillary Byers. There was a couple of items here that I'd just like to clarify for the record. And if you've read that letter that's posted to your website, she has given a very good detailed response to our presentation request and the issues in these letters. Good in the sense that it's quite full and complete. However, just for the record, we first built in 1988, not 2004. And our expansion building, the next expansion building, although it's referred to as a building, it's adjoining the existing building, which was the first building. And under industrial exemptions, with an adjoining building, there is a credit that is applicable. It may not be for a separate building, but it is for adjoining building. So that's it for the clarifications, and I'd like to turn the mic over to Claire Rietma, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and members of council. I think Cran has started us off on a very much of an overview. They have about 24,000 square feet there now, and they have a site plan approval for a little over 50,000 square feet altogether. And when they built their first buildings, there wasn't any development charges, and then later on, there were development charges, and they were dealt with on the basis of an industrial use. And the difficulty now is, of course, that we're kind of halfway in the game or partway into the game, and the rules are changing. They now want to build an addition to one of the existing buildings, 9,000 square feet. But they have been told that they don't qualify for the industrial exemption because they are commercial. Well, there's a whole lot of difficulties here. First of all, they're zoned industrial. They're not permitted commercial uses on their property. However, MPAC taxes them as if they're commercial. And that's what your DC bylaw refers to. And on that basis, the town proposes to charge them commercial rates. The difficulty is, of course, is that the amount of dollars you're talking, it starts to be equivalent to almost the cost of the building. And so it just doesn't make any economic sense. And there's a big mismatch in terms of the rules that are applied. In other words, zoning-wise, clearly they're industrial. DC-wise, they're commercial. And our position is that shouldn't be. They would be prepared to build a new building right away if we could sort this out somehow. Cren talked about the fact that they serve a residential customer, but they also serve a business customer. They have quite a number of very small businesses who need a bit of storage because of their business. And that's an area that they're feeling a lot of pressure and expansion from. And a lot of this 9,000 square feet would be to serve the businesses that are that currently exist in Caledon. Last summer, I had a very similar situation, coincidentally, in the town of Halton Hills, where their bylaw was being revised, and the proposal there too was to treat self-storage as commercial. We made a submission to council, and council amended the DC bylaw so that self-storage are recognized as being in the industrial category. And City of Toronto does the same very specifically in their bylaw. So here comes my ask. We're asking that JC Mini Storage be permitted to expand by 50% without the need to pay development charges, and that the use on the property for development charges purposes would be considered to be industrial, and that would make it consistent with the zoning bylaw. Their use is limited to an industrial use, notwithstanding MPAC. If we get to build new industrial buildings on this property, then the town will benefit by the taxes that are paid to you. And this expansion supports the businesses that use this service, mostly located in the town of Caledon. So those are my submissions. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, I've got quite a few here. So,
Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks, Claire, for coming. I've had a bit of a discussion with Peter. No, John.
John. Yes.
I guess if staff could clarify for us to do exactly what Mr. Reitman's asking with regards to the changes with regard how storage units are addressed within our DC bylaw, what will we have to do?
Mr. Wong. Thank you, Mayor Thompson. At this point, because our bylaw has been passed and it's been over a year, a change like this would require a DC background study or a mini background study to change the bylaw. A background study costs money. You have the public consultation that's required under the Development Charges Act, and you also have to you have all the advertisement, and that in itself is subject to appeal. The town is actually, as part of the 2018 budget, we asked for a budget to update the town's DC background study. It's required every 5 years, and we are starting that in 2018 with the plan to have that updated and approved by 2019. That process is a very consultative process where we actually meet with the community, and we have public meetings, and we get feedback. So any of the information that we've received in terms of what Halton Hills has done, what City of Toronto has done, is something that we will consider in our next DC background study.
Okay. Okay. Mr.
I know that doesn't address the short-term need, but do we have the ability to do anything like an interim change? I think the suggestion was is allow them to build now and then collect, depending on how the DC bylaw falls out a year from now.
Mr. Wall?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, that would not be something I would recommend. You would have many other potential developers coming to delegate council asking for same thing. The development charges are at the time are payable at the time of the building permit, and to go retroactively after DC background study is done would in my opinion expose the town in terms of a lot of other developers who have paid the DCs coming back and asking for refunds. Just to remind council, what the development charges are used for is the development charges are used for to support growth. So it's the town building infrastructure to support growth. If we don't collect the development charges, the planned infrastructure that we need to build to support growth, the money will not be there. So that for those reasons, I wouldn't recommend that.
Okay. And I think the comment earlier about who was here when there was no development charges, one of the reason is the region is where it is because they implemented development charges to pay for it, as a sidebar. Can I ask that the notice that we're having a receipt of delegation, that we direct staff to review? I guess one other question was, how does the region deal with storage units?
Mr. Wong?
Through Mayor Thompson, the regional DC bylaw actually has right in their bylaw that storage businesses are considered commercial.
And it's specified?
That's through Mayor Thompson, that is correct.
Okay. I think it's there's good information here that Claire's brought and Halton Hills, and I would ask that an amendment to the motion be that that staff be asked to review the question of storage units during the DC study that they're starting this year and hopefully conclude early next year.
You're going to have to make a motion on that, Councillor DeBoer.
That was my motion.
Can we wait till we get everybody else and then we'll follow back?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Shaughnessy?
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I was just reading the memo here. And it says that our commercial and industrial DC rates are exactly the same, that we don't show a difference between those two. It happens at the region. And when I've been at the region, people have come and asked, I don't think we can waive regional DCs. Like, we collect them and hand them over to the region. But I have seen people come to the region to ask for the DCs to be lowered for whatever reason or another. We're merely collecting theirs. And I'm just reading here, and I don't know how you calculated it, but it's even saying it's reduced because there is no water and wastewater. So I think it makes it really difficult for us on an individual basis. I don't know what other people are paying DC-wise. Yes, it seems high, but if everybody else is paying, how do I make an exception to you? I think what Councillor DeBoer says is that we just have to review this through our DC bylaw, and I'm sure even the town will be reviewing that in conjunction with the region, because the more we're on in line with one another and the terminology being the same, the better it is for all of us. But I do understand, as a small business, I mean, it's a fairly large hit, and I get that. I just don't see myself making one exception and not being able to do it for another. So, but thank you for coming.
Okay. Councillor Ennis?
Thank you. Thank you for coming today. So this file is very confusing. There's lots of history. There's an involvement with MPAC in their assessment and how that differs with how we zone it, which also impacts how they can grow and whether or not they should be paying development charges. So my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm getting it confused, is that even though it's assessed one way and zoned a different way, if the assessment and the zoning matched and it was less than 50% of the growth, then they wouldn't be made to pay DCs. So this is, Mr. Wong, you want to?
Mr. Wong. Just a clarification, Mr. Mayor. It's not quite that simple.
And that's why I know there's lots of complexities. But
well, if I can explain, the town in assessing whether it's industrial looks at the use. The use in our mind is a rental of space to individuals, to consumers. That is not an industrial use. That is commercial use. Secondly, our bylaw gives regard to how it's assessed by MPAC, and how it's assessed by MPAC is a commercial activity. MPAC agrees that also that it's not an industrial use. So those two factors in our bylaw deems it to be a commercial use.
Thank you. So with the review taking place next year, I understand, Mr. Wong, your concerns that this might potentially open us up for people to come back and say they paid when they shouldn't have, or vice versa. But I feel that in this situation that there is some confusion between the assessment, the zoning, and the history on the file. And like an issue that we've seen recently at the Region of Peel with regards to the development charges being charged for Gurdwara, we've seen that there is an issue in our bylaw at the Region of Peel and how we deal with those issues specifically. And so something that council and staff have been working towards is an interim provision and an agreement between the property owners and the region to have some sort of agreement where we basically say these are the development charges that you will have to pay, but we are going to hold for a year until we do that review and they will be retroactive. So if the region can do it in the sense that their council is looking at it and saying this is something that we've missed, or that it's not that we've missed, our society is growing and changing and we didn't account for it originally. So my question to you is, if the region appeal can look at it and say that this is something that we must review in our development charges bylaw, I see this as no different. I understand where your concerns are coming from, but I wonder from you if you can tell me how the Region of Peel, under their DC bylaw, allows for that provision and that interim solution, and why we can't do it here at the town.
Through Mayor Thompson, I'm not familiar with the case before the region. What I can say is that if you were asking the town to consider on an interim basis considering this industrial, this is where we actually have a difference between the town and the region. The region would continue to charge it as commercial, and we would be industrial. The other concern I have is that I think this sort of presupposes that council in the future will deem self-storage as industrial, which right now, although I will keep an open mind when I review the information from Halton Hills and Toronto, right now, as I stated, it is a commercial activity. Renting space to individuals is a commercial activity. MPAC, regardless of, in my mind, there's no confusion. Regardless of how a property is owned, MPAC looks at how it's used, right? So even if it's illegal use, MPAC will look at how it's used and basically assess the property based on how it's used. So there, from a staff point of view, we have been applying it consistently. There is no confusion.
So I would say that, yes, if they got an exemption here or had an interim solution made available to them, they would also be required to go to the Region Appeal. We can't make that decision for the Region Appeal, and I would think that our reports would have to act in tandem, and when we do the bylaw review, the region will be doing theirs as well. I'm just wondering if it's something, I don't want to flat out say no at this opportunity. I would like to ask staff to go back and to talk to Region Appeal staff and look at this as a possible solution and report back to council before, and I understand where Councilor DeBoer is coming from, where we give the referral straight back to and ask you to make sure that they're part of the review, and I know they most definitely will be part of the review, but I just want to make sure that we've, you know, crossed our T's and dotted our I's and looked at every possible opportunity to support our business community. So if I think that Councillor DeBoer is already making his referral, but I would ask that this actually be referred back to staff to speak with Region of Peel on this matter and then report back to council before we make a final decision.
Okay. Mr. Wong.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. In preparing the memo, we have consulted with the Region of Peel in terms of how they would assess this situation. So in talking to the Region of Peel, I'm not quite sure anything will change unless there is a delegation at the region and they are directed to basically look at this differently. But as I mentioned, a change to how we're doing it would require a DC bylaw, and we're basically starting that process now.
Okay. You're done, Councillor Innes? Councillor Misapelli?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you for coming forward and bringing this request to us. I'm certainly of the mind, and I've spoken to some of my colleagues about this, that I'm not a fan of doing one-offs, generally speaking. I believe if there is an issue, we need to change and make an adjustment, in this case, to the DC bylaw. Not just in one instance, because, as Mr. Wong said, and this is where I made these comments when we talked about forgiveness for fire response charges, and if you do one, you open up the door for others. And first and foremost, it's not fair to those who did pay full pop, and it certainly opens up the possibility for more coming forward. So I'm always of the mind that if there is an inconsistency, then we need to adjust the policy or the zoning or the DC bylaw to address it, and so that it's equitably applied. That being said, I do have some questions. And you mentioned another municipality, and so my question is, what is the general, and maybe through the mayor to staff, municipalities generally speaking, is there back and forth as to whether self-storage is considered industrial in some cases and in others commercial, or is it generally accepted that they're commercial as far as zoning?
Mr. Wong.
Through you, Mayor Thompson. In our quick research in preparing for this, we noted that different municipalities treat it differently. So there is differences, but as I mentioned, the information that's been provided related to Halton Hills in the City of Toronto, we will certainly look at that as part of our next DC background study.
Okay. The other, and what I think some people are talking about, you know, inconsistencies and irregularities between the zoning and what DCs would apply. And as I read the memo, because this has been an ongoing development from the 80s to present, where there was a time where there was no DCs, as you suggested, and then, you know, DC bylaws have come into force and have changed, and then there were DCs. Am I correct to assume that in previous iterations of DC bylaws, self-storage was deemed industrial, and then in more recent revisions, it was deemed commercial?
Mr. Wong, sorry.
Through you, Mayor Thompson, that is correct. I believe in the 2004 bylaw, the self-storage was permitted under industrial DCs, permitted under industrial DCs, and since then, I believe there was a bylaw update in 2009 and another one in 2014, and those bylaws have considered under those bylaws, the proposed development is considered commercial. The bylaws are the bylaws in place, so we charge based on the bylaws in place at the time of building permit. And that is something that, in my opinion, should not change.
Right, and I'm not disagreeing with you. And I think the reason that this has kind of presented itself as a challenge is, again, the long time frame of development from literally no DCs to industrial DCs and now to commercial DCs. I would be okay with having a conversation continue. I am not comfortable stating that they will be waived, because I am firmly of the mind that if we do for one, we should do for all. And we do not know what lies down that rabbit hole. The one inconsistency I see is, it's not really an inconsistency, it was in historical times deemed industrial use and therefore zoned industrial. And the bylaw for DCs has evolved and captured it as commercial, whereas the zoning is still in place as industrial. I know that as far as DCs, they may be the same industrial commercial, but as far as taxes go, I had a quick look at our tax ratio, and if I understand it right, because if we're going to go the way of, you know, bringing into conformity the zoning and the DCs that apply and switch it to industrial, am I correct in that, if I see it correctly, the industrial tax rate is 1.589 and the commercial tax rate is 1.327, so you would be paying more tax?
Yes.
Mr. Wong?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. That is correct. We have had a case in the past where the applicant, the developer, basically convinced us what the activity that they were doing on their premises was indeed industrial. We looked at it, and it was industrial. And at that time, we also we let the property owner know that exactly as you mentioned, that industrial tax rate is the highest tax rate. So they would be eligible for the exemption, but we would go to MPAC and basically give them the information that they provided to us. That would result in their change of type tax class to industrial, and they would pay the higher tax rate going forward.
Okay, so the applicant is aware of that?
Oh, yes.
Okay. You brought up an interesting point that I wasn't aware of, and so reading the memo, and I understand the DC bylaw well enough to know that up to 50% expansion is in an industrial situation is DC exempt. You mentioned something though about adjacent to an existing, which I understand to mean a separate building. So my question is, in our DC bylaw, is there and this assumes that we go down the road of classifying it as industrial, but in the event that we do, is there something in our DC bylaw that has adjacent expansion that there would be an exemption or a reduction?
That's true, Mayor Thompson. Basically, we're guided by the Development Charges Act, and in the Act it says if a development includes an enlargement of the gross floor area of an existing industrial building. So our interpretation of that is it has to be basically attached. The intent is an enlargement of an industrial building that already exists. It's not something that is on the same land, but physically separate.
So there's no language that speaks to adjacent?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, that is correct.
Okay. And I guess the last point I want to make...
Mr. Reed, I think, wants to comment on that.
Just to clarify, maybe my choice of words wasn't exactly correct. The site plan for the property has the buildings shown on it, and the building that I'm talking about, the 9,000 square feet, is attached to the existing building, and that's shown on the site plan. So we are talking about expanding an existing building.
Okay.
Yes.
It's just an issue of the zoning.
Okay.
Yeah. And as been talked about earlier, when I look at the allocation between the region and the town, the lion's share of DC charges payable is to the region. So of that multi-hundred-thousand-dollar you speak to, the lion's share of that is going to the region. So is it your client's intention to speak to the region? Because if you get our forgiveness, it probably won't have much of a dent on the total impact if the region stays at the commercial rate.
Yes, and yes, our next visit will be at the region, yes.
Okay. So again, I will iterate, and I'd be open and honest and forthcoming with you, is I'm not a proponent of doing one-offs. I'm a proponent of getting it done and enshrined in the policy or the bylaw, so it's equitably applied. If there's an error or anything like that, we can certainly deal with that. I think that's it for myself. Thank you, Mayor Thompson.
I need to get a clarification. You said the total DCs is 350,000?
Yes, I think that was my client's calculation.
Okay. Yeah. How much is the actual construction of the building?
Oh, the construction of the building is...
The building, forget the DCs. What's the cost of the building?
There's two components. When I said it was approaching the cost of the building, it's the building is actually a pre-manufactured building that they buy.
I know. How much?
It's around that number.
So it's about the same. So it's not more. Like the DCs aren't more than what the building costs are.
No, but they're about the same.
About the same. Yeah. And no, but I know that's some challenges we've had with farm trailers. Is the DCs were far more than what the trailer was worth.
Yeah, true.
That's where I was trying to get the question. I have one quick question here, and so we say this is because it's small business and it's commercial in nature. What's the difference between that and an industrial building condo or a building that's industrial that has a number of tenants in there doing business? You know what I'm saying? Like you're talking about, like they've got a lot of small businesses that use this complex as well. What's the difference between that and, let's say, like a complex where you have a number of small businesses, like what we even have in Bolton? Like Nixon Road is a real good example.
Through Mayor Thompson, the proposed business that we see is the rental of space for people to store items in the space. That is a commercial activity. If there is a proposed development where the proposal is industrial use or manufacturing something, for example, then that would be industrial.
Yeah. Well, like I'm using like a small business comes in and gets the stuff out every day. It's no different than an industrial complex where the guys come in every day and get their stuff and leave every day too, that you don't work there, but they, you know, their storage and everything's in that building. There's a lot of it. You know, I'm just trying to put apples to apples, and I understand where you're caught and where we're stuck. But I guess my challenge is we got to figure out how to get our zoning compliant too. But anyway, those are some of the questions. I do see the CEO wants to ask a question before next motion.
Yeah, through you, your worship. It's certainly not a question, but I just wanted to advise council, because over the years I've seen a lot of modeling done as it relates to the waiving of DC charges. And even though it may not seem like a significant sum at the time, when you look 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road, that $200, $400, $700,000, $1 million of DCs that you waived poses a problem for the municipality. So the way I always suggest to the councils I've worked for is that you really need to at least advise them. I'm not going to say they always have agreed with me, but I certainly have advised them that you have a current bylaw. And that bylaw had a tremendous amount of public consultation with the industry at large, as well as residential participation, as well as I would assume here, as it's happened in the past with me. And to make any decisions outside of your current bylaw causes you not just only financial stress down the road, but it also puts into jeopardy, as some have spoke around the table, about others coming forward. And believe me, they will come forward. So I think what Mr. Wong is suggesting is sage advice as it relates to you've put money in the budget to do the study. And to go through some secondary process or try to find some mechanism that appeases an individual property owner is probably not the best course of action. And while I've always and will always respect the decision of the collective council, I just have to give you that advice on the future, let's call it the amortization of development charges, for a lack of a better expression, in addition to upholding the current bylaw with the provision that within the next 12, 16, 18 months, there is a full review that may actually find that this particular use may be changed in the bylaw. But to do it now, I don't feel is the best course of action, and just wanted to advise you of that.
And there's no, let's say it is changed, there's no way of getting a refund back after X number of months, right?
Yes.
Correct. Councillor DeBoer, now I'll give you the floor.
Okay. I just want to make an amendment to the motion to receive the delegation, and that staff be directed, and the motion would be that staff be directed to review the commercial development charges rate for self-storage units when considering the next development charges bylaw update.
Do you have a second, or Councillor DeBoer? Councillor Groves, thank you. We got it up on the screen. Give everybody a minute.
I think this is, it's not what the delegation is asking for, but I think this is heading in the direction that will allow everybody to have an opportunity to speak and participate on the issue and come up with a solution, because there are other units within the community, and we can use the examples that Claire has brought forward, and staff can have a look at it, and it does come back to the fact that the whole DC bylaw with the ins and the outs all balanced to provide and pay for services that we are looking for over the course of the years. So I think that this is the prudent way to deal with it. And, you know, they're going to be well on their way this year, and it'll be early in the next term that it'll likely come forward. So,
okay. Councillor Groves.
Thank you through you, Councillor DeBoer. And I think, I mean, if we're going to look at to review the commercial development charges rate, I'm not sure that we want to only look at self-storage, but should, because I'll tell you, I've heard from other folks who have some complaints with the DCs that they're paying that are not just self-storage. So is it possible to, and I see Mr. Wong is smiling, so I don't know if we're opening up on a whole can of worms here, but
you're going to have the public information meetings coming forward, Councillor Groves, where people will be asking those questions to look at other things too.
Okay, right? And maybe at that point, I'm going to ask that when we advertise those public information meetings, that I know we put it out in the newspaper, but sometimes people don't read the newspaper, but that we maybe look at, you know, sending some notices to the business community so that they can come out and sort of have their say at that time.
And I agree.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Rima, we're good. Thank you very much. You can sit down now, and I'll now call the question. All in favor? Carried. Now I will call on Mike Puddister, Deputy Chief Administrative Officer of Director of Watershed Transformation, Credit Valley Conservation Authority, to approach the podium to provide a presentation concerning the Warwick Nursery Caledon development charges. You know, if you guys just got it built when you should have, you wouldn't be there.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson, members of council, for giving me the opportunity to speak to you this evening. We're on a bit of a theme here, I guess, but this is the same but different. I'd like to mention that in getting to this point, I've had a number of exchanges with your staff, including Mr. Galloway, Mr. Wong, and Ms. Lobo, and they've been very helpful in answering my questions and giving me some guidance on this. In summary, I'd like to briefly touch on some of the background related to our nursery operation, our current project, and concern with the development charges that affected this project. Warwick Nursery is located just north and west of the intersection of Old Baseline and Heart Lake Road, of course, in the town of Caledon. The 146-acre or 59-hectare property was purchased with the support of the Nature Conservancy from Nora and Orion Warwick on March 28, 1980. We began planning the move of the nursery from the Terracotta Conservation Area in Halton Hills to Caledon in 2010. As we began to accelerate our planting efforts in responding to the issues of biodiversity loss, water quantity and quality degradation, habitat fragmentation, and climate change, there was simply not sufficient space in the Terracotta Conservation Area to accommodate that need for growth. The development of the current Forestry Operations Center, or the workshop, and the new nursery in Caledon was completed in October of 2012. Our first production year was in 2013. Total current production is about 50,000 plants, both trees and shrubs, annually, including what we produce for the Toronto and Region Conservation Authority. The current building functions as a central hub for several facets of our operation, not only the nursery, but our naturalization program, our invasive species control program, including our dealing with emerald ash borer, reforestation, and forest management. The temporary trailers on site currently house 13 full-time staff, full-time and contract staff. Casual staffing scales up in April with about 18 additional staff and peaks at about 13, all of which we attempt to accommodate in the two trailers we have on site. This is an aerial showing you what the site looks like just off of Heart Lake Road. The town and CBC were key partners in the development of the Peel Climate Change Strategy. The Caledon Community Climate Change Plan recognizes that tree planting is a critical response to climate change, representing both a mitigation and adaptation strategy. Providing locally grown, bioregionally appropriate species at a reasonable cost is one of the best ways of responding to the climate change challenge. For over 60 years, CBC has partnered with Caledon landowners planting trees and shrubs. And over the last 10 years, we've planted almost 500,000 trees and shrubs in Caledon alone. CBC is also a partner with the town in the promotion and sale of trees and seedlings, as well as offering planting services. This newspaper article appeared in the January 25th issue of Caledon Citizen, which highlighted our partnership with the town. And the time cover is from a few years ago. We are fighting a war, and we're planting trees with military precision. At the May 13th, 2016 meeting of the CBC Board of Directors, the office expansion project was approved to proceed. In an effort to keep our levy request to Peel Municipality as low as possible, we've accumulated the funding for this project over a number of years. The new facility will be approximately 8,200 square feet and will be connected with the existing workshop. And this will provide overall improved efficiency, combining office and workspace seamlessly. This is just to give you an idea of the location of the expansion connected directly to the existing workshop building. On November 17th last year, we celebrated the groundbreaking of the office expansion, and we had a number of municipal representatives attend at that event. The building expansion at Warwick is subject to the Caledon's Development Charge Bylaw. There's no question about that. I've explored those opportunities with staff. An estimate of the DTC charges was provided by Caledon staff in July of last year when our building plans were being finalized. Our budget request for this project last year was $103,000, which is simply added to a pool of funding that we've been accumulating over the last number of years, thereby keeping our levy requests within the target of 3.3%. We also received a one-time contribution from the region towards this project to help make it happen. And the development charges essentially represents almost half of that being returned. In order to obtain final town approval, CBC paid the development charges of almost $200,000 on November 10th of last year. This, of course, also includes payments to the Region Peel and the school boards, as was pointed out in the earlier presentation. As I'm sure you know, our funding comes from the municipal levy, drawn from municipal and regional taxes. Payment of the development charges resulted in us giving a portion of that funding back. While to some this may not seem like a very significant amount, however, it is quite significant in terms of our total budget. So, in summary then, given the above, we respectfully request that the town refund the charges as a means of assisting CBC in the completion of the Warwick Nursery expansion. And I'd be pleased to answer any questions you might have.
I have one, since there isn't any on the board at the moment. Okay, well, I'm rolling here now. Question is your house. How many square feet was the house that you demolished, and has that been credited to the new building?
Oh, gosh. I'm really not certain of the square footage of it. Now, I'd be guessing to say.
Did you ask to have that credited?
As far as I know, it hasn't been credited, no.
Did you ask for that?
I did not, know.
Okay. Because when did you demolish the house?
About 3 years ago, maybe.
Okay, I was thinking two. That would qualify, would it not, Mr. Wong? Sorry to complicate things.
Mr. Mayor, that is a good point. I think you've been reading our development charges bylaw and the region's development charges bylaw. There is a credit for demolition. I was not aware that there was demolition on the property. We can certainly follow up and look into that.
Because I think that might help a little bit. All right, Councilor Mizzapelli, I'm sorry, I didn't see you on the board.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. That's okay. I certainly would support that. If there's an eligible credit to be had, that be explored, because that is in our DC bylaw, and everybody has a right to benefit from that. Excuse me. I just want to reiterate a point I made to the previous delegate, looking at the structure of the apportionment of the DCs. Of the total amount paid, basically just a sixth would represent the town's portion. So you're aware of that? It would only be the town's portion, which is roughly a sixth.
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I am certainly aware of that. I was hopeful that with a positive decision at town council, we would be sending a nice message to the Region Appeal that we'd like them to also support the nursery expansion.
Okay, and again, reiterating my some of my previous comments, I am extremely hesitant to do one-offs. As I explained to the previous delegate, I can think of, for example, TRCA. They are undertaking, certainly one that I'm very aware of, the Bolton Camp project, where there will be, I'm assuming, DCs paid for development on that property as it develops over time. And I guess to the CAO's point is if we open this up, then every conservation authority would be open to come in and ask for the same waiving of fees. And that is what, and I'm hoping you can appreciate, well, I fully appreciate what you're trying to do. Every dollar you don't have to pay, you can pour into the project. I get that. But I hope you can appreciate from our perspective is in the spirit of fairness, there could be other conservation authorities, things like that, that could rightfully so request or expect the same. The last question I guess I have is, so in a reciprocal kind of fashion, in examples where the town is undertaking a development of some sort on conservation regulated lands, does the conservation authority give a credit or a waiving of fees to municipalities?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. No, we don't provide a credit to municipalities. This is a little bit different in my view. Certainly, when it came time to pay the town for our site plan approval and building permit applications, we paid without any discussion. We do have a fee for service, much like you would in the review of planning applications. We have waived them for the farming community when they want to put in place a best management practice that will help support the environment, a good stewardship practice. But they do need a permit under our regulation. We have waived the permit for those purposes. But that's the only exception at this point.
Okay. And certainly I would encourage your group and other conservation authorities to participate in the upcoming DC review bylaw. And maybe your suggestion would be to have maybe not a full waiving, but even a reduction, recognizing what it is conservation authorities do and the vested interest municipalities have in supporting you in doing that. So I encourage you to participate in those. And I guess lastly, Mayor Thompson, do you need something of as a motion to
I think we'll let Councillor Downey, and then I'll put it back to anybody that
Perfect.
Wants to hear what has to be said. That's
Thanks.
Okay. Councillor Downey?
Thank you, through Mayor Thompson, to Mr. Wong. I'm just wondering, in regards to the demolition credit, is that information that you can obtain quickly?
Through you, Mayor Thompson, that the short answer is no. We have to look for a demolition permit. We have to do a conversion. If it was a residential, we have to convert it from residential to commercial. So there is a calculation required. Again, I wasn't aware that there was a demolition on this property.
Yeah. Well, I sat on the CVC board before Councillor Downey, and I knew there was a fair size house there, and it was in bad repair, but that's but it was being used for office space there for a while. So, Councillor Downey, are you still on?
So I guess I had prepared another motion, but in light of that not being information we can obtain quickly, I would move to refer back to staff and find that number, find that information, and then move ahead. My suggestion was to waive a percentage of the DCs and direct staff to look at discounting rates for partner agencies, namely conservations, in the upcoming bylaw review as well. I, along with Councillor Mazzapelli, am not a fan of the one-offs and would rather look at the picture in a more holistic way. But I also know that if the funds are paid here, the money just comes from over here. It's just a balancing act between the lower and upper tier. So at some point, the tax dollars are coming from the same place. So I guess I would move the referral just so that we can obtain that information and maybe do a little bit more investigating to come up with a compromise there.
Okay, do you have a seconder for that? Councillor Mazzapelli, you want to second that? Refer it back to staff to find out what that true cost is? Yeah. Okay. All right. Everybody know to refer? Everybody in favor? Pardon me? Oh, it has to be in writing. Okay. I was trying to hurry it. while we're doing that, it's been 10 o'clock. We've been here about 3 hours. Maybe everybody, we'll take a five-minute stretch, and that way we're not rushing everybody, and then we'll get back to business. If people need to use the washroom. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor Mazzapelli, that the request from the Credit Valley Conservation Authority to refund the development charges means of assisting CVC in the completion of the Warwick Nursery expansion to be referred back to staff in order to obtain additional information regarding the prior demolition on the property. All in favor? It's carried. Okay, that's it for delegation, so we'll get right back to where we started from. Okay. All right, moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor Mazzapelli, that February 6, 2018 General Committee Report recommendations regarding the following consent items be adopted. Staff Report 2018-8, read 2018 Property Tax Ratios. Staff Report 2018-10, a license agreement between the Regional Municipality Appeal, the Corporation Town of Caledon, of the property located on Charleston Side Road west of Airport Road in the Town of Caledon, Ward 1. Accessibility Advisory Committee report dated January 18, 2018. Nuisances caused by production of cannabis. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Mazzapelli, sorry, my tongue, that's a cookie. Second by Councillor Innes, that the February 6th of 2018 General Committee report recommendations regarding the following items be adopted. Staff report 2018-12, 2015, and 2016 enhanced roads program debenture, Ontario Revitalization Main Streets Fund, the municipal class environmental assessment process, curbing and landscaping of James Street road allowance, municipal numbering, enforcement of regulation of illegal cannabis and contraband tobacco, and advisory committee to the task force presentations. Councillor Misapelli.
Sorry, Mayor Thompson, this is my mistake. I apologize. There is one item here that I am not going to be supporting, but I do support the rest. I'm wondering through you to the clerk, what would be involved in having one broken out?
Which one is that?
It's the municipal class and environmental assessment process. And again, my apologies.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll do everything but the environmental class assessment process, and we'll do that one as a separate motion.
Thank you.
Okay. All in favor of excluding that one and everything else? Thank you. It's carried. And I'm stroking out that. Yeah. All right. But we can carry on and come back to that one, right? Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor DeBoer, that February 6, 2018 General Committee report recommendation regarding regulating and keeping of pigeons be adopted. All in favor? Opposed? Okay. It's carried. Moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor DeBoer, that February 6, 2018 General Committee report recommendation regarding the appointment of an alternative member to Regional Council be adopted. All in favor? Opposed? Okay. Okay, so I need a mover and a seconder for the regarding the municipal class environmental assessment, moved by Councillor Innes, second by Councillor Pefford, that the February 6, 2018 General Committee report recommendation regarding municipal class environment assessment process be adopted. Councillor Misapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I was the one who held this in committee and asked for some feedback from staff, and I'm thankful to staff for providing it. I respectfully can't support the motion as written. It is actually captured somewhat in the memo that what is being requested is even beyond that which was recommended by the general auditor's report. And there's, I'll keep it short. There's enough in there that I have concern about potentially risks to the environmental on the environmental side, and with that, for that reason, I respectfully will not be supporting this. Thank you.
Okay. And we're all entitled to our opinions, but the way I look at it is, it's a way of streamlining the process because I think we're spending way too much money of taxpayers' dollars on duplication. To me, it's one way of simplifying. So, all in favor? Carried. Oh, I guess I should say opposed for Councillor Misapelli. Sorry. All right, now where are we? Okay. I need a motion to go into confidential session, if we could, please. Moved by Councillor Misapelli. Oh, I guess I'm supposed to read it. I am so sorry. That council should go into confidential session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act for the purpose of February 6, 2018, General Committee report regarding the discussions of the donation of the Wilson Farm lands. And I got one to move it by Councillor Misapelli. I need a seconder, which is Councillor DeBoer. All those in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Grove, second by Councillor Shaughnessy, that February 6, 2018, General Committee report recommendation regarding discussions regarding donation of the Wilson Farm lands be adopted. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor McClure, that February 6, 2018 Planning Committee report be received. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor McClure, that February 6th Planning Development Committee report recommendations regarding the consent items be adopted. Heritage Caledon report is dated January 15, 2018. Recommendation from Heritage Caledon regarding request for Part 4 designation of the Moffat Schoolhouse at 6500 Patterson Side Road. Recommendation from Heritage Caledon regarding federal action on the conservation of heritage properties. All in favor? Opposed? This is carried. Moved by Councillor Misapelli, second by Councillor McClure, that February 6th Planning Development Committee report recommendation regarding Heritage Caledon request of non-designated property on the Heritage Registry, Trinity Anglican Church, 3515 King Street, be adopted. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor DeBoer. Oh, wait a minute, I'm getting way ahead of myself here. We're getting into bylaws. Is there any correspondence regarding the correspondence package that anybody want brought forward? Okay. Is there any announcements, Councillor Misapelli?
Well, there's no press here. I was just going to mention one thing. Tuesday, March the 6th, from 2 to 8 p.m., there's a blood donor clinic at LBM Bolton Union Community Center, and people can go on www.blood.ca to register.
Okay. Anybody over here? Councillor McClure?
On April 7th, there's a murder mystery at the fairgrounds for Home Church. I'm getting murdered again.
Okay.
No mystery.
Any announcements on this side at all? None? Okay. Councillor Misapelli, I'll start with you again with council inquiries. Any on this side? Councillor Innes.
It's a little bit of an inquiry and just a shout out because I attended the family skate that we had in Caledon East next door on Family Day yesterday, and it was packed. And the only sad thing is that we actually turned residents away because it was so full. So it's a good news and a bad news, but I'm wondering if we can take that into consideration for next year because it is a double pad. And I think that both sides were used, but I think the one side was for adults only. It's a family day event. We were turning little kids away from being able to skate. So if we can take that into consideration for next year, and maybe if both pads aren't available at the same time, then let's do something in the facility and they can do that and then take their turn skating because I don't want to see any little kid turned away. But it was a fantastic, and the fact that it was sold out is amazing and speaks volume to the community. And so a big thank you to you and your staff, Ms. Tollett, for opening up the doors and for providing that for our community. So thank you. And I think Brookfield as well, because I think it was Brookfield that sponsored the hot chocolate and all that kind of stuff as well. So thank you.
Okay. Anybody over here? Councillor Befford?
Yeah, so I have two. We just passed a motion with regard to heritage, and that is that we have now started sending out letters to people saying that their house is taken off, is putting on a register. Who do we direct comment to? Because I've had a couple of people call and ask questions, and who is it? Is it Sally?
Ms. Tullett?
Through Mayor Thompson, they should actually go to Sylvia Kirkwood. Okay. And then she can direct it to Sally, but she'll track them from there.
Thank you. And my second question has to do with public works and regards roads. And I know today's been a tough day because of drainage, but we've talked about $450,000, and again, we just approved some, and that's certainly a good start. But quite frankly, we're getting behind, certainly in Ward 1. I know it's a little bit too soon to say that we're in rough shape because we've had some alternate thaws and freezings, which is playing havoc with our roads. But I'm wondering if we have a plan to go beyond the money that we borrowed to do the best we could, because it's some of our lines are just getting pretty bad fooing, and I'm just wondering if we've – I know we said we would wait and see the results of a trial program that you had put in place. Are we working on a plan of any kind to assist us get a little further ahead?
Mr. Wong?
Through Mayor Thompson, yes, we are. Basically, what we have on the docket again this year is we actually are going out to assess all of our roads, do the pavement condition index, the PCI, and from there we are going to basically make a recommendation as to the new priority of roads based on the condition. As I have corresponded with many residents and councillors in the past, The program, the long-term program that we have on our website is not static. That changes based on every other year when we actually do assessments. It changes based on the freeze-thaw cycle, how roads last every year after every winter. What we have heard after the last budget discussion is perhaps look at going beyond the $4.1 million that we have in our enhanced road program.
Right.
And as part of the 2019 budget process, we can show council what that looks like. So our list of roads will be there, and what we can show is if we borrow 4.1, which is what our traditional program is, we can do this set of roads. If we do a little bit more, we can do this additional set of roads.
And just coupled with that, do we just have one hot tar machine, or do we have more than one? Hot patch.
Through Mayor Thompson, I'll have to look into that.
Okay. Sure, we got two. I mean, we're going to be out there using it. I just wondered if
there's at least two.
There's at least two. Okay, thank you.
The one thing, there's no further inquiries. Or Councillor Groves, yes?
Thank you. I have a couple. Through you to Mr. Wong. I just wanted an update, and I know we had some discussions around the table, and I can't remember if there was a motion passed or something with respect to the Simpson Road extension. I know the challenge that we had was getting the property owners, and I think it's to extend it further south, getting property owners together, and I just wondered if there's an update on that.
Through Mayor Thompson, the Simpson Road southern portion, that's Simpson Road and Mayfield Road, where we're at with that is we did meet with the developers that were interested or developer that was interested, and we have advised them to form a developers group, and we have followed up several times, haven't heard back in terms of whether a developers group has been formed, not totally on their side, but we also on our side. We have submitted our plan to the TRCA last year. I believe they came back with something like 35 questions, and we have been working our way through that. I'll have to get a status as to whether or not we have completely responded to the TRCA questions, at which point they are ready to provide a permit pending movement on the developers group side.
Right, thank you, because the extension of that road is a viable piece in terms of economic development along that area. So, yeah, thank you for the efforts, Mr. Wong. And I know it's been a challenge, and it's been like that for years and years and years, so hopefully we can make some progress in the next little while. The other question I have, and I don't know if it's a question more than sort of a comment, the plaza at 301 Queen Street, again, the garbage is overflowing, and I know that Laura Hall and her team, they have been doing everything they possibly can to deal with that issue. It really isn't our issue. It is that landlord who refuses to do anything in that plaza. And I'm just wondering, because social media, they're out there thinking, it's our problem, it's our fault, we have control over this. We really don't have control over that landlord. And I know that, again, to Ms. Hall's credit, they have done everything they can. Is it possible for us to put something out there in the newspaper somewhere? Because residents are thinking it's us. It's not us. And we need to put a message somewhere
to the public. I don't know how we get it out there to the public to let them know that we don't have control over this landlord. We are going in, we've hired contractors to go in to do the cleanup and we're billing him, but we have no control over him. So I'm just going to leave it, Mr. CAO, to your, for you to figure out how we deal with it so that we're not looking like we are the bad guys, because we're not. You are the voice of reason, so I'm going to ask you to be the voice of reason, to put something out there so that residents can really understand this, that it's not us. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Groves, and good point. One thing I will say is I want to thank all the team out there, and I know our public works guys are working through the night. We've got a lot of flooding going on, but it's a spring melt. The water is flowing. I got to tell you, the culverts, they've been working all, you know, last night and through the day trying to get all the culverts open. The water's moving. It's just a lot of volume to get where it needs to go. And I have to tell you that our guys are really doing our utmost, and especially for getting the culverts open and getting the water flowing. Job well done. I know we've had other challenges other years, but, you know, when you hit, 17 degrees today, that makes it pretty tough to stay ahead of everything. So I want to acknowledge that. I also want to mention Black History Month. It's the whole month of February, and as you saw the delegation tonight. And also I want to recognize that International Women's Day is March 8th. And we do have, there's a big event up at Orangeville with the your family transition place that day as well. I think it's a council day, so for regional council, so that makes it difficult for all of us. But anyway, if there's no further inquiries, announcements, I will now move on to bylaws. We've got a lot of them here. Moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor DeBoer, the following bylaws be read the first time and passed. Bylaw 2018-10, the bylaw to authorize an assurance of debenture of the regional municipality appeal. Bylaw 2018-11, to appoint alternate member of regional council. 2018-12 is a bylaw to establish and dedicate roads of a 0.3-meter reserve on Plan 43M-18-4 Atchison Drive and Boys Creek, Wallace Crescent and McDevitt Lane. Bylaw 2018-13, bylaw to establish and dedicate a layout name for public highway portion for 0.3 meters on Pillsworth Road. Bylaw 2018-14, bylaw of certain lands, the part lot control, 0 Phyllis Drive, legally described as blocks 112, 113, Plan 43M-2042. Bylaw 2018-15, bylaw to exempt certain lands as part lot control, 0 Phyllis Drive, legally described as blocks 108, 109, 110, 111, Plan 43M-2042. Bylaw 2018-16, bylaw to exempt certain lands of part lot control, 0 Maple Cider Street, legally described as lots 50, 51, 52, 53, 54 on Plan 43M-2017. And continuation, bylaw 2018-17, bylaw to amend bylaw number 96-31 to bylaw to designate certain properties including 14121 Duffy's Lane and house under Heritage Act. Bylaw 2018-18, bylaw amendment for number 249, the official plan of the town of Caledon. 2018-19, bylaw to the comprehensive zoning bylaw 2006-50 as amended to respect part lots 1415 concession 2 west town of Caledon region appeal, municipally known as 18251 McLaren Road. All in favor? Carried. Yeah, I see. Moved by Councillor Befford, second by Councillor DeBoer, that the following bylaw be read the first time and finally passed. Bylaw 2018-20, bylaw to confirm the proceedings of the Council Corporation of the Town of Caledon for this Council meeting held on the 20th day of February 2018. All in favor? Carried. Councillor McClure, you want to move adjournment? Second by Councillor Mizzapelli. All in favor? Thank you, everybody. Meeting adjourned.